go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the 25th day of March, 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us live on the interweb tubes. It's also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. Hi, I'm Robin. If you happen to pop by this afternoon, well, or this morning, depending on where you are, or sometime tomorrow night or something, I don't know. It's a big planet. You will be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and moderated by, well, me. Because Sparky let me know with plenty of advance warning that he would be out and about this afternoon. He has an assignation with his new lady friend, and I hope they have a magnificent afternoon. And so we'll see how the whole Friday on the Front Porch thing works out here in about an hour's time. You know, I could probably back off the drum loop there and be a little easier to hear. I need a producer. Oh, well, I need a lot of things. But right now I need to say thank you to our subscribers for the 25th day of the month. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So as a consequence, we say thank you to Mark and to Peter and to Mark. We have a fraternity of Marks, you know, and to everyone who is a partial sponsor of the program via subscriptions at PayPal and Patreon. And so that's how we keep all of this going. And so here we are, end of the week, and the fundraising goal for just to get everything caught up is $920. $920 fundraising to get us to where we are today. That means funding today, funding yesterday, funding Tuesday, and $20 of Monday. $20 more and Monday will be fully funded. So the new PayPal button is there on the main page at HeadOn.live. Easy to find, works like a charm, and I heartily encourage any of you who are able to do so to help us get the bills paid. I've got an internet service provider bill that's just waiting for my attention, not to mention several others. And you know, after this, we will only have 3 days of March, when More and Monday commences on the 28th. Four days. I can't count. The 30th and the 31st. So getting caught up this evening is rather a big deal, and hopefully that will happen. I wanted to get the program started this evening with a little object lesson in the difference between right-wing hate radio and progressive conversation radio. And I do not apply this solely to myself. but also, oh, by the way, it's colder than a well digger's ass here. That's why you hear the little heater blowing hell-bent for leather. And Annette came back here because I was for at least a moment or two, I had a special in-studio guest, little Miss Lucy Per Morningpaw, decided she wanted to come back here to do the program with me. I think her mama came and got her. We'll find out. We'll certainly know if she decides to come and promenade across the mix desk in the midst of the program. But anywho, like I said, I do not apply this little object lesson just to myself. I think I think all of us who work this side of the aisle are this way. Whether it's me or Malloy or Rick Smith or Thomas or Nicole Sandler, if we're wrong about something, we don't have a problem saying we're wrong. And I am here to announce at the top of this Friday on the front porch for the 25th day of March 2022 that I, Miss Robin Kincaid, was wrong. I was wrong. I was completely wrong. Totally wrong. Utterly and entirely wrong. Because, as you know, for several days I've been saying that I feared that since he is the petty queen of the Senate, that Joe Manchin might decide to overturn or derail, I guess is the better term, derail the chances of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to be confirmed to the Supreme Court of the United States. You have no idea how happy I was earlier today to see that I was absolutely, totally, unqualifiedly incorrect. Headline from NBC News, Manchin will support Jackson's Supreme Court nomination, likely ensuring her confirmation. Senator Joe Manchin, DWV, announced Friday he plans to vote to confirm Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court, praising her exemplary record and career and labeling her supremely qualified to be a justice. Joe, let's remember, is not a lawyer, but at least he knows beans when the bag's full. He said in a statement, after meeting with her, considering her record, and closely monitoring her testimony and questioning before the Senate Judiciary Committee this week, I have determined I intend to vote for her nomination to serve on the Supreme Court. Her wide array of experiences in varying sectors of our judicial system have provided Judge Jackson a unique perspective that will serve her well on our nation's highest court. He also said she was warm and gracious and has the temperament to make an exceptional jurist. He did not, as far as I can tell, mercifully, say that she was well-spoken or articulate or that she... And this is Tracy's fault. She was real clean.
Oh, God.
But I'm happy he's doing it. I'm happy he has found the... he found the light. Now, on the other hand, I'm sure they're still grunting and barking and pissing and moaning over on the right wing side of things. Because, of course, Moscow Mitch McConnell, who has voted twice to confirm her, no, I'm sorry, at least once to confirm her,
well, he, He said, I cannot and will not support Judge Jackson to her lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court because she declined to address critically important questions and ameliorate real concerns.
That was, those were the words of the most loathsome creature ever to crawl or skitter or scrabble or creep or slither out of Colbert County, Alabama. And, mercifully, Matt in San Francisco, Matt asks, did she say Joe was one of the good ones? No, he didn't. And, you know, we take our little miracles where we get them and ask not the origin. But Moscow Mitch, who once posed grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush in front of a huge Confederate battle flag while he received an award from the Kentucky Sons of the Confederacy or some other noxious right-wing filth group, said, Judge Jackson was the court packer's pick, and she testified like it. You know, for God's sakes. And, who here is surprised? In other Supreme Court news, Clarence pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas, the first that we know of credibly accused sexual abuser to be elevated to the high court, was released from the hospital today, having missed several days of oral argument before the Supreme Court. Not that his presence was much missed, no. And his release couldn't have come at a worse time, because as we discussed on the program yesterday, yeah, there are some kind of icky, gross mash notes between his wife, Virginia, and a college dropout named Mark Meadows, a preacher from North Carolina, who somehow slithered into the House of Representatives, and then into the maggot White House. And the calls have grown. We talked a little bit about last night that no one can force a Supreme Court justice to remove himself from considering a case, that there are, in essence, for all practical purposes, there is no body that has the power to enforce canons of judicial ethics with regard to a justice of the Supreme Court. And, that's true. Although people are now saying that old Balls and Strikes Roberts should look Slappy in the eye and say, Bub, you are not going to take part in any proceedings relating to January the 6th, now that we know that your wife was an active participant in the planning thereof. The thing is, though, because he is a Supreme Court justice, Slappy can look at old Balls and Strikes and say, yeah, why don't you piss up a rope? Because I am a justice of the Supreme Court of the new 90 states of America, and you can't do a damn thing. And old Balls and Strikes would have to look at him and say, well, you know, you're right. But it's getting a little hot for him. Ron Wyden, of Oregon is speaking out rather plainly. Today, he said, in light of new reporting from numerous outlets, Justice Thomas's conduct on the Supreme Court looks increasingly corrupt. And he said, extraordinary conflicts of interest on the nation's highest court regarding domestic terrorists attacking democracy and people scheming to overturn an election demand a clear response from anybody who's taken an oath to uphold the rule of law. And he went on to say that that he should recuse himself from any cases related to January 6th, and that going forward, if Genghis Khan runs for election in 2024, that Slappy should also recuse himself from any considerations therein. But that's a little bit of a closer call, because that not only should Slappy do that, Ann's boy Neil should do that, Brat should do that, and so, of course, should Justice Handmaid Amy COVID Barrett. Will any of that happen? Don't count on it. In the statement that Ron Wyden, Senator Wyden of Oregon, issued, he said, judges are obligated to recuse themselves when their participation in a case would create even the appearance of a conflict of interest, the appearance of impropriety, as we discussed in yesterday's program. A person with an ounce of common sense could see that bar is met here. And over at the New York Times, a reporter there named Emily Flitter said, when his son worked for Wachovia, he stepped back from a slew of bank regulatory cases that reached the court. Not doing it now looks like breaking precedent. Yeah. And, by the way, he was the only judge to dissent when the Supreme Court told Genghis Khan that he could not withhold documents from the January 6th committee. Senator Wyden noted, Justice Thomas participated in cases relating to Donald Trump's efforts to rig and then overturn the 2020 election while his wife was pushing to do the same. Will anything happen? You know, what do you think? Yeah, me neither. And of course, that man, that man with a spine made of sopping wet pasta. I'm talking, of course, about Kevin McCarthy, the man who yearns, who aches, who fairly quivers with his pathetic desire to be Speaker of the House of Representatives. Well, he was asked about Slappy on the court and whether he should recuse himself because his wife was sitting there swapping text messages talking about how cue ball shit about how people were going to be kept on barges for trials for their life at Guantanamo, journalists and the like. And Kevers said,
no, I think Justice Thomas could make his decisions like he's made them every other time. It's his decision based upon law. If you spend any time studying this Supreme Court justice, he's one who studies correctly, I mean, from all the way through. If he sees it's not upholding the Constitution, he'll rule against it. If it's constitutional, that's what his job should be. It's him.
And so this was asked at an event, and Kevers was seated next to Jim Jacketoff Jordan, who hopes to soon run the House Judiciary Committee, who responded, totally. No, really, that was... Jacketoff Jordan, do you agree?
Totally. Tubular.
Totally. Does it get? I hope it does. That it gives you a sense of the absolute creeping horrors to even think about either one of those people having anything resembling real power in the House of Representatives. Bad. I mean, gives me the fantods. Let's see here, shall we?
No, I think Justice Thomas could make his decisions like he's made them every other time. It's his decision based upon law. If you spent any time studying the Supreme Court justice, he's one who studies correctly. And I mean, from all the way through, if he sees it's not upholding the Constitution, he'll rule against it. If it's the Constitution, that's what his job should be. It's him.
It looks like Jim Jordan, you agree with that as well.
Totally.
Totally. Oh, God. What a bunch of clowns. Some strange things, though. And strange because of things a Republican said. The governor of Idaho is named Brad Little. 2 days ago, he signed a bill into law. It's essentially it's a toxic twin to the Texas abortion bounty law, and it says that only families this is how it's different from the Texas law. Only families can sue abortion providers. So let's say a woman goes to get an abortion. I don't even know where she could go in Idaho. Remember, they also offered an amendment saying that, never mind. No, that was Missouri. It was the trans kids in Idaho. But only families can do it, including, while a rapist couldn't sue for an abortion over his rape baby, the rapist's mommy, daddy, brother, sister could sue. Really? So he signs the bill, and then he has a message for the legislators there in Boise. It is Boise, isn't it? I remain committed to protecting the lives of preborn babies, because the postborn ones can go fuck themselves. Preborn babies, and strongly encourage the legislature to promptly rectify any unintended consequences with this legislation to ensure the state sufficiently protects the interests of victims of sexual assault. I am particularly concerned for those vulnerable women and children who lack the capacity or familial support to report incest and sexual assault. Ultimately, this legislation risks re-traumatizing victims by affording monetary incentives to wrongdoers and family members of rapists. But because in most states, they don't have a rule like the Congress has, namely that a gubernatorial veto requires a two-thirds majority to override. A simple majority, and please understand that the majority of the Idaho legislature is maggot all the way to the bone, fetus fetishist all the way to the bone. Well, they would have overridden Brad Little's veto with little concern and less difficulty. So he signed it anyway and said, "Hey, maybe y'all could come back and fix it, so that when, let's say, Uncle Daddy rapes his baby girl, that mommy can't sue the abortion provider? Could we do that? Is that a reach?
Is that just a bridge too far for the fetus fetishists? Well, my guess is yes. Now the funny thing though is that Brad Little would be savaged for that statement. Because in the 2022 GOP gubernatorial primary, Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeachan, who is crazier in the head than a hog is in the ass, well, now she'll make hay out of this. And running as an independent is, of course, Ammonium Nitrate Bundy, the guy who besieged a bird sanctuary and was allowed to peaceably walk out and then allowed to walk by a federal court in Oregon. Yeah. Now, where the Supreme Court is concerned, they're up to their usual dirty business. For instance, up in Wisconsin, Flavio's listening this evening. Saying earlier, some refugees count more than others. Gee, I wonder why. The largest displacement of refugees since World War II remains that of the Syrian Civil War, which since 2011 saw 6.8 million refugees and asylum seekers exiting Syria and another 6.7 million internally displaced, or in total, half the population of Syria. The Ukrainian diaspora so far is 2.2 million. Yeah, I get that. But Flavio, heads up, you may have already heard this. This past Wednesday, the Supreme Court of the United States, using what is referred to as the shadow docket, well, they bounced an electoral map, duly and properly developed and implemented, from Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers. And over at Twitter, the legal columnist for Slate, Mark Joseph Stern, said, "This is an absolutely shocking decision. The maps were adopted by a Republican justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. This appeal was considered a Hail Mary, and it prevailed. I am stunned by this ruling." Well, it was an unsigned majority opinion. It has been described as bizarre. Rick Hazen at Election Law Blog says it is a manifestation of hostility to the Voting Rights Act. Oh, really? You think? So, to sum up, the court used the case in an emergency procedural posture to reach out and decide an issue that could have waited for full briefing and argument, either in a lower court in a challenge to the maps, or if the Supreme Court had set a case through argument. It decided these issues in ways hostile to minority voting rights without giving full opportunity for airing out the issues and pointing out how this will further hurt voters of color. It continues to chip away at the Voting Rights Act without acknowledging that it is killing off the last major protection for minority voters from discriminatory redistricting plans. But that's not the height of the hypocrisy. Yeah, oh, no. No, no. I think this is the height of hypocrisy. The case, of course, comes out of Texas, because, of course. Oh, and thank you. Thank you very kindly to... thank you to Cecilia. Cecilia, I so appreciate it. Cecilia was first out there to get us started on the fundraising this evening. She took us down to 910. We got $910 to go. We've only got $10, and Monday is finally funded. Thank you, Cecilia. I hope you get a lot of company this evening. This seems to me ironic in the extreme. A guy who was convicted of murder in Texas and who is awaiting awaiting the time at which he will be murdered by the state of Texas in retribution for the murder he was convicted of committing. Well, he challenged rules of the state of Texas that said he could not be touched or had hands laid upon him by some gospel sharp and prayed over before the state murdered him. No, really. It's okay to murder him in the name of the state, but he does have a right to have some berobed divine put his hands on him and, I don't know, tell Jesus to take it easy on him up there. After all, he's going to be a murder victim just like Jesus was. Put to death by the state just like Jesus was. And so it made it all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, where old Balls and Strikes himself, John Roberts, authored the opinion and said,
Texas appears to have long allowed prison chaplains to pray with inmates in the execution chamber, deciding to prohibit such prayer only in the last several years.
The state had said, no, you can't. Texas, you know, had said, no, we can't be doing that because, you know, the priest might fuck up and mess up the intravenous lines going into him as he's being horizontally crucified. But the Supreme Court, delving deep into the weeds, said, well, the priest can touch a part of his body away from IV lines like his lower leg, because the law you're arguing for, Mr. Ramirez, had said, well, you know, I mean, it's religion, right? I mean, he can touch him on the bottom of his foot. So finally, the Supreme Court took up a case of just exactly where a priest can touch an immobilized person.
Oh my God.
No word yet on anointing with oil, or whether the gospel sharp can bring a copperhead or a rattlesnake or something like that with him. No. But, you know, because this court is so sensitive to religion, well, this court just cried out for relief because John Henry Ramirez's religious rights to be murdered by the state while somebody tickled his footsie in the name of Jesus begged for resolution. Did anyone speak up for... Well, no, I mean... I guess not. It's not the place, because... No, the opinion was 8-1. 8-1 in favor of letting John Henry Ramirez have his gospel sharp there, laying his hand upon his foot and praying over his hairy toe, while the state went about the business of horizontally crucifying him. 8-1! God, it was so close. It was almost a unanimous opinion. Now, anybody care to guess? Should I just, like, take a couple of minutes of silence for y'all to write in and message and whatnot and give me your best guess? As to who the one lone dissenting judge is, Maybe there's a closet atheist on the court and said, oh, come on. No, no, it's not that way. 8-1. Well, I'm not going to hold up the program. The lone dissenter was, of course, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas. Hey, Steve in New York wins. You get a cowbell for that, Steve. Was it Slap, Slap, Slappy Thomas? Should we maybe, I don't know, should we refer to him as Fappy Thomas? Yes, it was. Slap, Slap, Slappy Thomas said
John Henry Ramirez has repeatedly attempted to delay his execution in his current lawsuit is but the latest iteration of an 18-year pattern of evasion.
Really? There's evading going on in the death house down to Huntsville, Texas? Do tell, Fappy. Sounds like Clarence wants him dead. Wants him good and dead. Wants him real dead.
Well, if I wasn't recuperating from a horrible infection, I'd like to go down there and kill him myself.
Of course it was Slappy. You remember Slappy,
whose decisions will be based upon the law and the Constitution.
You heard what Kevers said earlier. Steve in New York noting, let me get this straight. Slappy gets to decide how to act based upon his interpretation of the law. Do I get to decide how to do things based on my interpretation of the law? I interpret penal law such that I get to walk into a Rolls-Royce dealership and drive one off the lot for free. Well, you know what? I bet you Slappy could do that. But no, federal law protects the religious rights of prisoners. And the standard of proof that they were subjected to, Texas, was that there was some sort of compelling state need to keep the priest's finger off the condemned's foot, and that they were the least necessary to answer the security and I guess poison flow necessities of the Texas Department of Corrections. But the old Balls and Strikes kind of issued a mea culpa of sorts, saying, you know, y'all need to think about the religious needs of you know, in your death penalty states, y'all need to think about the religious needs of the people you're murdering. If states adopt clear rules in advance, it should be the rare case that requires a last-minute resort to the federal courts. In other words, if you can just slow your roll a little bit, we'll let you kill the shit out of every prisoner in the building if you want to. I wonder if that priest would want to be standing there next to him if he was in South Carolina with those three dudes that all had live rounds. Talk about screw your courage to the sticking place. And just because somebody's bound to be wondering, John Henry Ramirez, back in 2004, was involved in a robbery at a convenience store. This guy sounds like a real asshole. Ramirez stabbed Pablo Castro, age 29, 29 times. Oh, I'm sorry. No, he wasn't age 29. We don't know how old he was. That was a mistake on my part. He stabbed Pablo Castro 29 times and stole $1.25 from him. kill the shit out of him. Jesus would kill him. Right? Because we love us some death penalty here in the new 90 states of America.
And I'm proud to be an American where at least I can kill people I don't like.
Right. I wonder if our buddy John Bridivo recalls this case, because it took place down in because the goddess of irony is a good goddess. It took place in Corpus Christi, which, of course, in Latin means body of Christ. Well, at least maybe he'll get a nice last meal. And maybe he'll get prayed over some. Maybe he done got saved in prison. I don't know. But since we are talking about the Supreme Court, they got one kind of right. Imagine this. It was a divided opinion. And, I mean, 8-1 is a divided opinion, but this was apparently more divided than that. The case, it was known as Austin versus U.S. Navy SEALs. And it arose from the fact that Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said that every active duty member of the military had to get COVID vaccinated. In a military where getting vaccinated, I've been told by people who've been through the process, you stand in a line and they march you through and they give you 5 or 6 inoculations at one time. And go on now. And we talked about the guy who got this ball rolling, U.S. District Judge Reed O'Connor of Texas, who on January the 3rd entered a restraining order stopping the government from compelling some sailors to be vaccinated. And the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said they would not, and that is a wild-eyed right-wing bunch of boobs, they wouldn't block Reed O'Connor's order as the litigation went forward. But in that aforementioned divided opinion, well, they said that the Navy can, well, I'm trying to figure out how the Navy can't just drum them the hell out, but no, the Navy can limit the deployment and training for 35 Navy SEALs and other special ops forces who claim religious reasons for not getting the COVID-19 vaccine. Moments like this, you realize we have greater problems than we know. And the Biden administration asked the court to pretty please block Reed O'Connor's order that said that the Navy has to assign and deploy the sailors whether they're vaccinated or not. In other words, put them out there all over the world so that they can get COVID and then spread it the hell around. It was a 6-3 decision. The three dissenting justices were, of course, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, Anne's Boy Neal, and, come on, there's a pattern here this evening, and, that's right, Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can, Fappy Thomas, who, you know, I think the reason he wound up in the hospital is because he was out there on the hustings in Utah running his yap about how the credibility of the Supreme Court was being harmed when his being the first credibly accused sexual abuser on the court has probably done more harm to the Supreme Court than anything else. And, you know, you can kind of tell that by virtue of the fact that when he was out in Utah, he was running his mouth about credibility and whatnot, and particularly in the realm of court packing. And, of course, he had lots to say about court packing. Lots to say, that is, except for noting in terms of court packing that was exactly what Genghis Khan did with the connivance of Moscow Mitch. Because the proper answer is, well, the number of the justices on the Supreme Court is not set within the four corners of the Constitution itself. The number of members on the Supreme Court is solely and exclusively the province of the Congress of the United States. They can't reduce the number, but they can take it from 9 to 900 if they want to. But he didn't. Instead, he burbled politically about it, and then the goddess of irony handed him a week stay in a hospital, sick as a dog. Get the idea that this is kind of a busy little Friday? Matt in San Francisco, subject line priest. Well, there is a solid argument that priests could benefit from restrictions on where to lay their hands. Cowbell. You know, this weekend I'm going to try to create a little space in the cubby here where I keep the cowbell. Maybe I'll do it right now. Wow. I accomplished something. Space created. But this court is and remains a hot mess. You know, there's so much to get into. You got to read this, the bullshit opinion piece about Judge Jackson's competency. Sweet Mary Mother of Jeebus, this country is so done. Give me a clue, Ron. You forgot the linky. But I do want to go back to something because it continues to bubble up in the consciousness. There's a couple here that dovetail. Ron and Raleigh sent this to me yesterday. A link from the Washington Post from the sports pages. Don't get a lot of those links. The link is to an article about Heaven Fitch, who won the state championship in the 106-pound class in wrestling. Her record was 54-4. She was the only girl in her 8-person bracket. Some yahoo on the Stephanie Miller show said that allowing trans girls to swim is inherently unfair. Maybe allowing girls to wrestle boys and winning is inherently unfair, too. According to records, girls wrestling is the fastest growing sport with female participation in the United States. If trans girls can't participate in girls' sports as a matter of fairness, then cis girls participating and winning in boys' sports should not be allowed as a matter of fairness. Then there's Lily Luft. She won the state wrestling championship in Iowa, where they take their wrestling seriously. It seems that what the right-wing asshats are saying is that girls are inherently inferior to boys in sports. That's absolutely the truth. And that goes back further than the current controversy. When I was young, the girl across the street was much faster than me. At 6'8" tall, I believe Brittany Griner, presently cooling her heels in a Russian hellhole, could post up on me and kick my ass, and I'm 6'3". Once again, this is all about fear. If you remember when tennis player Renee Richards transitioned and started playing on the women's tour, she did not dominate. No one is looking at the facts vis-a-vis transgender athletes. Girls are playing against boys in tackle football, baseball, and other sports, but boys are not allowed to play field hockey against girls. If fairness is the issue, there should be no cross-gender sports participation. By the way, Ms. Richards prefers the appellation transsexual. A lot of older trans people do. And Lord, does that get the younger trans population all kinds of pissed. They've even come up with terminology for people like Renee Richards. They call her true scum. Don't bother. And then the other side of that spectrum, I do this for you, okay? So you won't have to. God, it's just awful. If you think that gender dysphoria is a condition that can be ameliorated by medical treatment and surgery, you are called a transmedicalist or true scum, T-R-U-S-C-U-M. And the other side that says all you got to do to be trans is say that you're trans, and if you never do a damn thing about it, that's cool too. They are referred to as two cutes, T-U-C-U-T-E-S. Again, just informing, there is no need whatsoever to go off into those trans fever swamps. But I did want to by going back to Ron and Raleigh's note from yesterday, I wanted to share something that I saw a couple of nights ago. Spencer Cox is the governor of the state of Utah. And he did something that was the Republican governor of Utah. He did something that smacked a little bit of, I don't know, integrity. They've been having the great trans sports debate out in Utah for months now, with lots of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, and of course, children being the victims, little trans kids. And so they thought they had negotiated a sort of middle path where kids would go before an athletic commission and get cleared to play sports. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Republican majority in the Utah legislature said, nope, and just passed a flat-out ban on transgender students playing girls' sports. Again, just like what Ron was talking about, no ban on transgender boys or even cis girls playing boys' sports. Because that's the way the TERFs and the transphobes operate. One of the funniest things I saw yesterday was a meme that came across my... it came to my attention. And it's a picture of a college swimmer still in the water, mouth open going, yeah, with a clenched fist, having just won the race. And the person posting it said, I don't know, that's just kind of how athletes look. And someone immediately chimed in and said, because the swimmer has these broad shoulders and these rippling, bulging muscles. Very male build. Maybe this individual should compete with the males. And responding to that idiot, someone said, that's a picture of Katie Ledecky, a cisgender woman. And it is, in fact, a photograph of Katie Ledecky, who is cis, and whose record is more than eight seconds better than anything Leah Thomas ever posted. Ever. But the hilarity of it comes from the fact that the TERFs and the transphobes will immediately start barking and grunting their TERFy and transphobic stupidity without even so much as bothering to even look at a photograph and find out who that is. Basically, the real world equivalent in that case is of Austin Powers saying, "That's a man, baby," and tugging at the hair of Basil Exposition's mama. "Austin, that's my mother." Trans Terms, Matt in San Francisco says, "Oh, I hope there's not a test at the end of the program." There will not be, for I am a merciful trans hostess of a progressive liberal talk program. There will be no test. There will be no pop quizzes. But anyway, back to Utah. Governor Spencer Cox took that hateful bill and vetoed it. Now, he too recognized that he would be overridden in lickety-split. But the thing is, he wrote a letter. And it was a hell of a letter. I wish Spencer Cox was a Democrat, because it sounds like something a Democrat would write. But this man probably elaborated the issue at hand better than anything I've seen. He addressed himself to the President of the Utah Senate and the Speaker of the Utah House, and wrote, "Dear Mr. President and Mr. Speaker," there's not even a dear here. And he implored people, "I know most won't read past the headline, but please read my veto letter, especially if you disagree with me. The veto will be overridden on Friday, today, and then we'll have a special session to fix a few things. Trans sports is a terribly difficult issue." It's really not. But Spencer Cox then said, "Please be kind to everyone." And he wrote the following: "I believe in fairness and protecting the integrity of women's sports. I know both of you are committed to these same ideals and that we have worked very hard together to resolve the many issues surrounding the transgender student participation in sports. Unfortunately, HB 11 has several fundamental flaws and should be reconsidered. Because the bill was substantially changed in the final hours of the legislative session with no public input, and in a way that will likely bankrupt the Utah High School Athletic Association," notice the money always comes first, "and result in millions of dollars in legal fees for local school districts," because the money always comes first, "with no state protection," because the money always comes first, "and for several other reasons below, I have chosen to veto this bill. The transgender sports participation issue is one of the most divisive of our time." Yeah, it is, but it doesn't have to be. Let the kids play. End of sentence. No problem. "It is entirely an astroturfed issue, as we've discussed here ad nauseam, that was ginned up in England and shipped over wholesale to the United States. Ginned up by people like Joanne Rowling, who, if you really want the skinny on her and her transphobia, go over to YouTube, look for a channel called ContraPoints, and a commenter by the name of Natalie Wynn, and she's got a video simply called J.K. Rowling. It's marvelously entertaining. But if you really want to educate yourself on this, you cannot do any better than watching that video. You will come away absolutely gobsmacked at the brilliance of Natalie Wynn. But he says, "The transgender sports participation issue is one of the most divisive of our time. Because there are logical and passionate arguments by many parties, finding compromise or common ground can be difficult. Sadly, there's very little room for nuance in this debate. But I hope you will permit me an opportunity to explain my reasons for vetoing HB 11. Utah has a history of trying to approach complicated issues in ways that bring collaboration and fairness. Well, we'll take that as read. From immigration and criminal justice reform to LGBTQ protections and religious freedom, Utah has often shown an unusual willingness to find new and compassionate ways to solve the most toxic debates of our time. For this reason, I was heartened and encouraged to see legislators sitting down with LGBTQ advocates to work on a compromise that would both protect women's sports and protect, really, and allow some participation for our most marginalized transgendered. Spencer, get somebody to help you. It's not a verb. It's a noun, an adjective. It's an adjective. The ED doesn't need to be there. Youth. No other state has done this, and we hope that Utah could be the first. As you know, the negotiations centered around the potential compromise of a commission of experts that would help decide on an individual basis which kids would be able to participate. Next page. The concept was fairly simple. For the very small number of transgender kids, that time we didn't get an ED, who are looking to find a sense of connection and community without posing any threat to women's sports, because trans girls are girls. The commission would allow participation. However, the committee would prohibit participation in the rare circumstance of an outlier who could pose a safety threat or dominate a sport in a way that would eliminate competitive opportunities for biological females. Unfortunately, over time, the negotiations got bogged down debating the makeup of the commission and some of the language in the bill. While we were not able to reach an agreement on the commission, the bill sponsors did agree to remove some of the most troubling language. As the hallmark of a good compromise, neither side was thrilled, but there was a path forward. And while I admit it was not perfect, there was a general agreement that we could pass the bill and continue tweaking the concept during the next year as necessary. On the last day of the legislative session, we began hearing rumors of a fourth substitute of the bill that would implement an all-out ban, with the new commission only coming into play if a court prohibited the ban. While it is not unusual to have legislators propose changes to bills, it is unusual to have major overhauls proposed at the last minute on significant policy issues that have been the subject of so much negotiation. What Spencer Cox does not say here is that there was an absolute flood tide of toxic dark money from right-wing religion industry groups into the pockets of the people who did that last-minute dark-of-the-night substitution. He continues saying, it is even rarer to have these pass, especially with no communication with those who had been negotiating the issue. So you can imagine my surprise when the fourth substitute was revealed late on the last day of the session and debated and passed just a few hours before midnight. It is important to note that a complete ban was never discussed, never contemplated, never debated, and never received any public input prior to the legislature passing the bill on the 45th and final night of the session. For this reason, many legislators who might have otherwise supported the policy felt compelled to vote against it. I believe in process, how we make policy matters almost as much as the policy itself. An opportunity to participate is a critical component of public trust. While changes are inevitable, this was more than just a cosmetic change. This was a complete reversal of every discussion, public or private. Every article written by the media on this issue was about the commission and a compromise. Every answer given during press availability was about the commission and a compromise. Much of the debate that night centered around the difficulties of bad process and a lack of time to get constituent input. This guy actually sounds kind of intelligent, which is wild for a Republican. This lack of time and input has serious legal and financial implications as well. More on that below. And while I appreciate the apologies I have received from legislators involved in the truncated proceeding, I feel a veto is necessary to improve the process and to better allow the public an opportunity to weigh in. He continues. Or am I missing a page? Okay. One of the worst results of that process was the inability of legislators to understand the financial impacts that will be forced upon the Utah High School Athletic Association. We're back to the money again. And believe me, there's going to be a gobsmacking reveal here in a minute. And local Utah school districts that will inevitably get sued under this bill. The UHSAA is a private organization that runs the real risk of insolvency and bankruptcy, putting our entire state athletics program in danger. Having just completed a lengthy and very expensive lawsuit, because what that means is that would hurt the boys' football and the boys' basketball. God damn it! Having just completed a lengthy and very expensive lawsuit, the organization does not have significant reserves on hand. Furthermore, the UHSAA has been clear that if the state ever attempted a ban, the state would also need to provide indemnification to hold the organization harmless in the forthcoming lawsuit. Unfortunately, HB 11 provides no financial protection for the UHSAA, only an explicit invitation for a lawsuit, which will come, because the very fact that they only ban trans girls means that it's actually a violation of Title IX. And numerous other lawsuits have been temporarily enjoined during the pendency of the litigation on precisely that grounds. I would know. I live in one of those states. With several lawsuits already being litigated across the country, why would Utah insist, even encourage, expensive and debilitating legal action with no recourse for the organization that serves our own student-athletes and schools? I hope you can agree that if we want to protect women's sports, bankrupting the institution that is responsible for their participation is a bad place to start. That's polite Utah Mormon speak for y'all are a bunch of dumbasses. To make matters worse, shortly after the introduction of the fourth substitute, there was a hastily adopted amendment to explicitly exclude Utah's local schools from indemnification. Because, these are Republicans who hate public schools in the first place, remember? Maybe that's part of this. Because the fourth substitute was so quickly introduced at the very end of the session, there was significant confusion at the time about the reason such a clause was necessary and the impact it would have. Clearly, the reason for the amendment was to avoid a fiscal note that could not have been funded at such a late hour without nullifying the bill. However, during the discussion on the Senate floor, it was incorrectly argued that government immunity would protect schools from a lawsuit based on the ban. Because these lawsuits would involve potential civil rights violations, Title IX, they would not qualify for governmental immunity. This means that schools would inevitably face costly litigation and the potential for significant damages. For this reason, many schools across the state of Utah have reached out expressing concern. Had they been aware of the language of the fourth substitute with enough time to comment, they undoubtedly would have shared a similar message with legislators who were forced to vote on the bill with no public input. Now, what is telling here is that they passed it nonetheless. They knew what they were doing. They knew they would get pushback, and they passed it nonetheless. This doesn't have to be trans legislation. It's anything the Republican wants. They prefer to operate in the dark and still of the night. It's what Republicans do. If they wanted public participation, they would have said so. Again, why would we risk significant legal exposure for some of our poorest schools with no financial support when other states that are already funding identical legal defenses across the country? We know a little bit about poor public schools here in West Virginia. If the state insists on a policy that encourages significant litigation, I believe the state should pay for the litigation. It's my understanding that you have polled your members and that you have sufficient two-thirds majority to override a veto. Well, you do have to have two-thirds in Utah. How about that? Should this occur, I will immediately call a special session to change this section of the bill in order to avoid bankrupting our athletic association and local schools. A simple veto override will not resolve this fundamental issue. And then he goes into some of the particulars with regard to trans athletes. I also think it's important to address some of the arguments that came up during the passing of the fourth substitute. Many legislators brought up the trans swimmer at the University of Pennsylvania who's recently dominated women's swimming, setting records and lapping the field. There's no need to talk about lapping, Governor. I agree with those who are concerned with this egregious example. It's so egregious that she is, like I said, more than 8 seconds off the actual record set by a cis woman. But never mind. First, this bill would do nothing to prevent that example. Oh, hold on. I believe this is terrible for women's sports. There are natural advantages that come from birth sex, which is the very reason we have men's and women's sports in the first place. It isn't. It's a lot more complicated than that, but let's go on. Setting records and taking scholarships away from biological gendered women. Oh, Jesus. Should give everyone pause. It's bad for women and is bad for the LGBTQ community as it turns allies and reasonable people into opponents. I don't believe this type of participation is compelled by the Constitution, but that decision will be left to the courts in the months and years to come. So he's doing a little dog whistling out there. Saying, listen, I hate the transes as much as you do, but this shit's going to be expensive. However, there are a few problems with this example being the reason for a complete ban in Utah. First, this bill would do nothing to prevent that example, as HB 11 only applies to high school and middle school. Middle school, you know, pre-puberty. And does not impact collegiate athletes. Second, if there was a similar example in a Utah high school, the proposed commission would prevent it from happening. Indeed, that is the very purpose of the commission. It would attempt to both protect women's sports and allow our most vulnerable an opportunity to participate. Interestingly, the very legislator who introduced the fourth substitute of the bill called the commission concept brilliant. I do not know if the commission would completely solve this divisive issue, but I appreciate the innovative and respectful approach that it offers. I also believe there's broad misunderstanding around the current rules regarding transgender participation in sports. In particular, from the testimony of many, there seems to be a belief that any biologically born male could simply say he was trans and begin participating in women's sports. This is incorrect. For many years now, the UHSAA has had in place a rule that only allows male-to-female transgender participation in women's sports after a full year of difficult transition hormone therapy and in consultation with a healthcare professional. For anyone pubescent and above, this is actually not a bad idea. This has likely prevented some participation and helped to even the playing field. As a representative of the UHSAA said, as we read the science right now, we like our policy. This year, we have 4 students who have gone through our paperwork, and we've not had any complaints from any other students or families or school administrators. I should note that while I have some reservations about a policy that requires or incentivizes these transitions, it is the policy in place. He would rather we didn't exist. Finally, there's one more important reason for this veto. I like how it's finally, because we've focused on the money. But, he says, I must admit, I'm not an expert on transgenderism. Well, that's okay. I'm not an expert on Mormonism either. I struggle to understand so much of it, and the science is conflicting. No, it isn't. It is not conflicting at all. The American Psychological Association, the American Pediatric Endocrinology Association, the American Pediatric Association, every medical association and behavioral health association in this country says transition saves lives. There is no doubt as to the reality of trans people. We're not like leprechauns or hobbits or pukas. So no, the science is not conflicting, but he had to throw a bone. And he struggles to understand so much of it. If a kid is trans, a kid is trans. End of confusion. If a kid thinks they might be trans and they go to therapy and the therapist inquires diligently, we will know at the end of that inquiry whether the kid is trans or not. But he struggles. When in doubt, however, and this is the nice part. When in doubt, however, I always try to err on the side of kindness, mercy, and compassion. I also try to get proximate, and I'm learning so much from our transgender community. They're great kids who face enormous struggles. Here are the numbers that have most impacted my decision. Those numbers are 75,000, 4, 1, 86, and 56. What do those numbers mean? There are 75,000 high school kids participating in high school sports in Utah. There are 4 transgender kids playing high school sports in Utah. There is 1 transgender student playing girls' sports. 86% of trans youth reporting suicidality. 56% of trans youth having attempted suicide. And Spencer Cox, governor of Utah, says 4 kids and only 1 of them playing girls' sports. That's what all of this is about. 4 kids who aren't dominating or winning trophies or taking scholarships. 4 kids who are just trying to find some friends and feel like they're part of something. 4 kids trying to get through each day. And remember, 3 of those are trans boys. 1 is a trans girl. And then this statement. Rarely has so much fear and anger been directed at so few. I don't understand what they're going through or why they feel the way they do. Well, maybe you'll have a trans grandkid someday, Spencer, and maybe you will then. But that was snarky. I don't understand what they're going through or why they feel the way they do, but I want them to live. But I want them to live. And all the research shows that even a little acceptance and connection can reduce suicidality significantly. For that reason, as much as any other, I've taken this action in the hope that we can continue to work together and find a better way. If a veto override occurs, I hope we can work to find ways to show these 4 kids that we love them and they have a place in our state. I recognize the potential political realities of my decision. Politically, it would be much easier and better for me to simply sign the bill. I've always tried to do what I feel is the right thing, regardless of the consequences. Sometimes I don't get it right, and I do not fault those who disagree with me. But even if you disagree with me, I hope this letter helps you understand the reasons for my decision. Sincerely, Spencer J. Cox, Governor. And by the way, he provides footnotes about the suicidality argument. So while there are problems with the letter, what appears to be the motivation behind it, 75,000, 4, 1, 86, and 56, is about the most humane thing. Well, it is the most humane thing regarding this issue that I've ever heard come from the mouth of a Republican. And it would be to everyone's benefit if we could if Democratic governors would pick up those numbers and run with them and overwhelm the bigoted arguments of the TERFs and the transphobes. Because they are not good faith actors. The people who passed that legislation in the dark and still of the night in the 11th hour were not good faith actors. They were doing the bidding of the aforementioned transphobes and TERFs. Darlene sends me a note simply asking, birth sex? Question mark. Well, the common usage now is to refer to, okay, me. I am an AMAB, A-M-A-B. I was assigned male at birth because the only thing they looked at was between my legs, and this is all ultrasound or anything. It was back in the dark ages. My obstetrician rode a dinosaur to the hospital, as a matter of fact. And so they looked between my legs and said, "It's a boy." But the other way to interpret that A in AMAB is assumed male at birth. And that's what it is. It's an assumption. Somewhere between 98 and 99% of the time, the assumption will be correct. But for somewhere between 1% and 2% of the population, the assumption is dead wrong. And gender, you know, God, I have gone so much further. We should be starting the front porch, but I'll try to wrap this up quickly. The other day, in her colloquy with Marsha Blackburn, the Harvard-educated Ketanji Brown Jackson was asked a question by the Mississippi State-educated Marsha. And that question was, can you define what a woman is? And we talked about where that question came from yesterday. And Judge Jackson evaded the question by saying, Senator, I'm not a biologist. The problem is, had she been a biologist, she would have been in no better position to answer the question. Because, frankly, according to various practitioners of science and scholars of gender law and people who philosophize on biological grounds, they said that even that answer, I'm not a biologist, was a little bit sketchy. But noted that a competent biologist would not be able to offer a definitive answer either. And there's a general agreement within the scientific community that there's no sufficient way to clearly define what makes someone a woman or a man, and that there are a great deal of variations on the theme, as it were. Rebecca Jordan Young is a scientist and gender studies scholar at Barnard College, and she said, I don't want to see this question punted to biology as if science can offer a simple definitive answer. Because it can't. The rest of her answer was more interesting and important. She said, as a judge, what I do is address disputes. If there's a dispute about a definition, people make arguments, and I look at the law and I decide. And so that brings in a context of both biology, perhaps genetics, philosophy, language. Generally speaking, context. Nonetheless, the proud daughter of Starkville, Mississippi said, well, this is a major red flag. You know, for pity's sakes. Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure where we are with Friday on the front porch. If we can get the call going, I think that would be a good thing. But I'm not sure who's running the show in there right now. So good. There we are. All right, standing in for Sparky, who's sparking this evening. We have Roger. Hey, Roger, how are you?
Damn it! You got to unmute your microphone. I'm not used to starting so early. I'm doing fine.
Early? We're halfway into the program. I filibustered 26 minutes extra.
Sparky and Steve and I got together and chatted a little bit and figured out how to make it all work, and so the porch is open.
Good deal. I'm glad to know it.
I've got to take a short break just for a second, so continue talking.
Oh, goody. I can't wait, but I need to do something real quick, so stand by.
Okay. Okay, I'm back.
Sorry, I was hearing some noises outside, and it turns out to be Ferg. I didn't know he was going to be home this evening. But, you know, you hear noises outside, you want to check on them. So,
well, I'll get us started here with the Supreme Court hearings, the Senate committee bullshit. The answer that I always wanted to hear, and she never said it, was I refuse to answer that question on constitutional grounds because there is no religious test for any office in the United States government.
I wanted to hear that, too. But she also wanted very badly to be a Supreme Court justice. And no one has more dainty and tender fifis than the members of the Senate of the United States.
But, I mean, okay, that might not have quite been the place for it, but damn it, somebody has to come up, and they're always talking about originalism, and I'm sure she had it right in the back of her mind that she could have quoted the little thing about there shall be no religious test for any office in the government of the United States. And for them to be drilling in on whether she was a Protestant, a Catholic, when does life begin, when doesn't it begin, and all that other religious bullshit should have been stomped either by her or the chair of the committee. And I find the chair to be at fault here because he should have ruled that question out of order.
Well, I can see your point, and I do not disagree with it. We're talking, of course, about Dick Durbin of Illinois, who I thought did a fairly good job trying to keep the inmates of Bedlam from flinging poo and smearing them on the walls like they did on January 6th. But he has to be reelected too. And it would almost be a form of political suicide to get all technical and constitutional about that, because the state of Illinois would be plastered with billboards saying Dick Durbin hates the Bible. You know it. These tax-free organizations would do exactly that. I thought Judge KBJ handled it fairly admirably because she did get around to kind of saying, and besides, the fuck. And of course, this was all part of the, you know, on the first day of testimony, this was all part of the little hissy thrown by Lady G. And that, you know, that signaled the way that the right wing was going to go in this entire tableau.
You know, Robin, when I think...
And the other thing...
What, Benny? Or Ben? I'm sorry. Sorry, Ben.
Sorry, Roger. What I think Dick Durbin did was he let the Republicans show their asses in the hearings, and he let them show America just how deplorable they really are. And not only that, but the reason why I don't think he spoke up was because he wanted them to put their own foot in their mouth.
He was letting them have enough rope. The question, the problem is, there are too many people, too large a percentage of the American people, tugging on that rope too. Yeah. And that's just a reality of the political climate in which we exist.
Yeah, I watched the first 3 days. I didn't watch it yesterday because I couldn't stand to watch it another day, because the first 3 days I was so angry. I just wanted, every time Ted Cruz or Josh Hawley or Lindsey Graham spoke, I just wanted to punch my TV or just wanted to reach their TV and slap them upside their head. And so I was like, you guys, leave her alone and stop drilling her about child pornography. Obviously, you guys are obsessed with child pornography and you're trying to tell us something about yourselves now.
Right.
Well, yeah. Their obsession with child pornography kind of reminds me of some of these people that are just so anti-gay. And I'm thinking of some of the fundamentalist preachers who end up getting caught at the summer camp or something engaged in homosexual activity.
With kids.
With kids. And this obsession that those three had with the pornography number makes me think that they are, in fact, if they're not actively engaged in the distribution of kiddie porn, they certainly are enjoying it and just haven't been caught with it saved on their hard drives yet.
Well, as I said during the when the hearings were going on, I'd like to get a look at the browser histories of any of these little bastards. Because we know, I forget if it was Pornhub or Pornhamster, X-Hamster, I don't know. I don't go there. But at one point in time, when Republicans were having a hissy about how upright and godly and moral they are, they released streaming statistics on where the porn they served out was most accessed and what kinds of porn it was. And trans porn and lesbian porn are apparently the favorites in good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican states like Alabama and Utah. In point of fact, last I checked, Alabama and Utah lead the nation on a per capita basis in downloads of porn. It ain't California.
I knew Massachusetts. Utah was up there.
Yeah, it's Utah and Alabama. And I swear, I can't. Don't hold me to this. And it gives me no pleasure to say it. But when they did the topic by topic analysis, Jesus. One of them was trans porn. Another one was lesbian porn. Lesbian porn is big in the Bible banging South. And here in West Virginia, I think our number one was incest porn. Shut up. Just shut up. Don't say anything. Shut up. But.
What?
I said shut up, Jeremy.
Yeah, I was telling Jeremy the other day, unfortunately, Kansas is joining the list of states coming out with anti-transgender laws.
Sure they are. It's a big winner for Republicans because it gets their base all kinds of head up. Whoo, they get worked up. Because it's motivated, just like anti-gay legislation, by simple gut level lizard brain hatred. Most of these people.
Well, the right wing's already come out and said, "How can a woman that can't tell who's a woman have enough smarts to be on the Supreme Court?"
Right, and that just shows how stupid they are, because everything is nuanced. Everything is nuanced. I mean, for instance, just to take up that one, KBJ could have said, well, you know, it's somebody with two X chromosomes and a vag. Boobs. Done.
But that would fail
the analysis because there are, for instance, not to get too deep in the weeds, but the technique that was used for my gender confirmation surgery was actually developed by a brilliant Russian surgeon back in the 1960s or 70s, in which he harvested peritoneal tissue from the abdominal lining to create an extension for a vaginal canal. And it wasn't developed for trans women. It was developed for assigned female at birth women who were born with medical atypicalities where their vaginas didn't properly form. Now, if that woman whose vagina didn't properly form and who has no fallopian tubes and no ovaries and is therefore never going to be able to reproduce, well, under Marsha's rubric, she would not qualify as a woman. Because, among other things, she would never have the hormonal ability to develop secondary sex characteristics. She would be as dependent upon externally administered estrogens as I am. And postmenopausal women, not women, according to Marsha Blackburn, who is herself probably a postmenopausal woman. I mean, the way the Republicans are approaching this is the bugaboo of a small mind.
Yep.
Frankly. How do you define? I mean, if we're going to go down this definitional rabbit hole, determinist that it is, then let's just define what constitutes human. Because you know what, there are animals out there of other species and et cetera who exhibit more humanity than a whole bunch of two-legged neonotinous primates that get automatically classified as human. You know, you think about the doggy who hasn't seen its human in years and years and years. Or no, the better story is the guy who bought a lion at Harrods in London back in the 60s as a cub, because I guess they sold lions. And there's an entire film about it. The guy raised it until it was just impossible, and so they took it. They took the lion to Africa, somewhere in Africa, and they gently, carefully released this lion into the wild. And they went away. And years later, the guy who bought the lion as a cub came back. They knew where the lion was. And it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen recorded on film. That lion running up to him and absolutely expressing something you can only describe as extreme joy at seeing that human. Now, that lion is more of a human than Marsha fucking Blackburn. Okay, let's be clear. That lion is...
There's another case.
I mean, that lion displayed certainly more humanity than, oh, I don't know, that pipsqueak with the Charlie Chaplin mustache who murdered 6.5 million human beings. I mean,
there was also the case of the guy that was raised at in a jungle somewhere, but they had chimpanzees or gorillas or something of that sort. You know, that kind of an animal, and they had turned him loose, and he went back with his wife, and they found the ape, and then the ape brought his family, and yeah, they sat on the bank and had all kinds of a love affair, with the gorilla introducing his wife and the human introducing his wife, and they all got along on the riverbank, but everybody was afraid that there would be a territorial number. Ah, the great ape was just happy. No problem at all.
Right. Exactly. And all of this is born, and see, now, what we're getting at, Roger, is this is a topic that is far too complex for a home ec major from Mississippi State, who also happens to be completely benighted by evangelical fundamentalist amosexual Christianity. We as humans have a desire, a yen toward taxonomy. We just love to categorize things. Whether it was Carolus Linnaeus or who was the monk with the pea vines? Darwin. But it is not. But you know, you could posit a thought experiment where somebody came here from, you know, one of the amorphous multi-limbed aliens from Norblap 9 came here and would see us entirely differently. Maybe see the living, creeping, you know, every living, creeping, crawling thing would be one thing, and maybe they would have the mentality to recognize that the structure of the planet itself was alive. Because maybe they would have higher cognition skills than we do. It kind of goes back to that old joke about the two young fish who are swimming along one day, and the old fish comes by swimming the other direction and says, "Water sure feels nice this morning." And the two young fish look at each other and go, "What the fuck is this water he's talking about?" An advanced mind can step outside Gregor Mendel. Thank you, Stephen, New York. And a more advanced mind can step outside the confines, the box, if you will, that has been constructed by, you know, for the most part, well-meaning people. You know, Aristotle was into it. You see it in Genesis where they plagiarized the Epic of Gilgamesh and the creation story and two by two and the ark and one of the earliest examples of taxonomy is where Adam and Eve go running around. No, they weren't running. They were just strolling through the garden and naming stuff. Categorization. Mark Twain handled it so beautifully in The Diary of Adam and Eve. When Adam, who is completely perplexed and absolutely a lost ball in high grass, but he's met Eve. And Twain was commenting on the differences between how men and women think. And he said, one morning she looked at me and said, "Over there, you see that?" And he said, "Yeah." She said, "That's a bear." And Adam says, "Well, how do you know it's a bear?" And Eve says, "'Cause it's a bear." You know, intuitive intellect versus deductive intellect. And these are all things that your average, everyday, garden variety Republican can't comprehend. Because they are, because higher level big brain primate thinking is not available to them. And it's sad.
And they're proud of it.
Right. They are. They're damn proud of it, Roger. Absolutely proud. And Steve said, let's just stop a sec. Marsha's question was only about creating a soundbite for her campaign and the National Republican Senatorial Committee to separate Emery and Marveline from their money. Precisely. Absolutely. Matt in San Francisco, by the way, says, come to San Francisco. I wish I could. The Republicans should come to San Francisco. Whatever your kink, you can find your tribe here, and you don't have to hide. Which is probably the reason they go on and on about liberal San Francisco values. Yeah, I remember when, speaking of kinks, when Bill O'Reilly, who sexually harassed a woman, one of his subordinates on his production team, by getting drunk and telling her that he wanted to get in the shower with her and rub her down with falafel. He meant loofah, but he's Bill O'Reilly, and he was loaded. And most, you know, that's the thing with most of these Republican freaks, you know, they're not turning the lights out and doing it missionary style. That's why in my campaign, I had to modify the way I describe myself. I now say I am the first out trans woman to ever run for a seat in the West Virginia legislature. Because there is no, Republicans being Republicans, there is no way of knowing how many of them have been, you know, behind closed doors with the shades drawn, prancing around in a stunning cocktail frock and wishing to God they could live their best authentic life. But they can't, because the Republican Party is a closet with 440 wired into the doors. And they dare not get anywhere near it, lest they be burned. Because they're Republicans. And they have an enforced neo-Calvinist morality, or it's not even a morality, it's a code of conduct. And that's why it's Republicans who you find getting caught in the Kmart parking lot with a man in their mouth. Thank you, Arthur. That's good. That's subtle, but good. Arthur says, I'm in the 21% of us that hate taxonomy. I know. Then it's like Life of Brian when he flings the door open, the windows open, naked as the jaybird, and there's 1,000 people in the street below. And he says, I've got one or two things to tell you. And the crowd screams back, tell us! Tell us both of them! And he says, first, you're all different! And the crowd in unison responds, yes, we're all different. And then one lone voice in the crowd says, I'm not. Brilliant. Brilliant. But when you consider the way that Republicans are incapable of complex thought, or that they are closeted away from complex thought, or they've been electroshocked away from complex thought, or conditioned away by their gospel sharp or whatever, you begin to understand why their politics are so hopelessly backward. No, Lamar the Magnificent, we are not going to change Ted Cruz's name to that. We're not going to do that. We are not going to do that. And by the way, we're coming up on the third hour of the program with a $910 fundraising deficit. 10 more bucks and we're done with last Monday. That's cool. But it would be great if we could pretty please make this a little bit better. Thanks to everybody who made it better last night. If we can keep that going, it would be beyond helpful. And it would be a better guarantee that the program will continue to exist. So I'll cross my fingers. Ron and Raleigh said, what did you think about Ted Cruz asking Judge Jackson whether he could declare himself an Asian? Really, says Ron, Texas can't do any better than this dipwad. He'll be running for the Republican presidential nomination in 2024. We're doomed. Doomed, I say. And I will not fight you on that, because he thinks he's the anointed because he came in second in 2016. Oh, God. He came in second with two states versus everything that Nitwit Nero did. But he said, yeah, presidential timber. And you know what? He could. Let's be fair, Ron. He could declare himself Asian. All humanity evolved in Africa. Technically, every person on this planet is African. But cultural constraints mandate against that. If, for instance, and see, these are the questions we can ask, but a Supreme Court nominee, that we can answer, but a Supreme Court nominee cannot. If Ted Cruz wants to call himself Asian, he is certainly free to do so. But he is then also free to deal with the consequences thereof, and the one person who comes to mind more than any other is, of course, Rachel Dolezal, who isn't even remotely black, but you remember the great kerfuffle of years ago and the shit that she caught for saying that she was. So, I mean, he thought he was being clever, but he's not near... As we found out, and I know a lot was said about, you know, Ketanji Brown Jackson's Harvard education. Harvard is not an indication of brilliance. It is an indication of the ability to get into Harvard. Any more IQ tests are not necessarily a measure of intelligence. They are a measure of one's ability to take tests. I mean, I've always been a good test taker. I don't know why, but I am. Well, yeah, white privilege might have a lot to do with that. But Ted Cruz thinks he's brilliant when, in fact, he so isn't. Oh, and by the way, the book that he had a conniption about at Georgetown Day School is now like number one in children's books on the Amazon list, which is rapidly supplanting the New York Times bestseller list. So, but, you know, he doesn't even understand the law of unintended consequences, for God's sakes. Thank you, John. Thank you, Jeremy. Glory, we are done with fundraising for Monday, and we've gotten started on Tuesday. And we are $30 into fundraising for Tuesday. We've got $870 to go in an hour and 6 minutes for a Horn Friday on the Front Porch community-made miracle. Thank you. Silent R. Lamar, I know you hate Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the booger-eating future king of America. I do, too. But changing his name to Butt Plug Cruz is, I don't... Because Silent R says, you know, the way he has his head up his ass most of the time and Trump's the other times. I get it. But I've been using Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, for a very long time, and that's going to be hard for me to change. I hope you can understand. Let's go around the room some. Tracy, your dot is green. Are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm just, you know, fighting my way through Hollywood, trying to make my way to the other side of L.A. because, you know, Friday afternoon traffic is particularly bad. I'm still in shock about the text that I sent you earlier that...
Joe Manchin?
Yes. I mean...
Well, there is a law of nature at work here. Even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then.
I mean, we were just talking about, you know, Mr. Joe and how he don't like the, you know, the colored folk and all that. And then he's like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and do what no one expected him to do. I'm shocked. I tell you, I'm shocked.
Well, I'll take my little miracles wherever I can get them.
Yes, Lord, yes. But I'm happy. I will take it, you know, like you said, I'll take my miracles where I can. Because when I saw the headline, because it was in a flash, and I saw Joe Manchin and I saw Will, and I'm like, I was expecting the Will not to be following the Will. And I saw Will, and I'm like, no. For real, though? So, yeah. That part. So, yeah, that's about it. And you know, that's about it.
What was it? Because I tried to recall it when I was at the beginning of the program. What was it you said, at least he didn't say that about KBJ?
That she's...
articulate.
Articulate, intelligent, and she's clean, too. You know, because you know our current president said that about, you know, another dark-skinned person when he was running against Obama for the presidential nomination in 2008. Well, you know, and he's a clean fella.
Oh, Jesus, I'd forgotten.
And he looks clean, too.
We have to laugh about this because otherwise the fury would... You know, sorry.
It's just... It's those racist things that white folks say about us, but it just stands to... You know, I wrote a paper about this years ago about the things that I did not see growing up when it came to advertising on television. I never saw black people in soap commercials and shampoo commercials. And I think I even hazard to think that I actually asked my mother at one point, I'm like, they don't think black people take baths or wash our hair? Because, I mean, granted, the shampoo...
Well, you know, you have special shampoo.
All right. Right.
That's my Richard Pryor white guy voice.
Because, seriously, I mean, if it wasn't for the Afro Sheen commercials during Soul Train, I wouldn't have known that there was, just seriously, no shampoo commercials, no soap, you know, or in the detergent, I mean, no commercials. But now we're in all the commercials, you know. But then again, I was telling a friend of mine, I said, yeah, I'm happy to see us in more commercials, but are we in the boardrooms making the decisions on about the commercials? Are we in the boardrooms talking about content and stuff like that? And, you know...
They must at least be getting a little bit of the message, because for the most part, they... aren't making the mistakes that they once made in years gone by.
Oh, God, yeah. Most definitely. It is, you're seeing more black, brown people in positions, but are they in positions of power? Are they in management and stuff like that?
Well, is it just, I mean, it seems like things like Emmy's So White and Oscar's So White have at least had somewhat of an impact, because I am seeing actors of color in more roles where, you know, just anybody could play it.
Right. Well, and this year's Oscars is being produced by Will Packer. He's a brother. I forget what he directed. And Regina Hall and my favorite, Wanda Sykes, and Amy Schumer, take it or leave her, are hosting this year. So that should be interesting. I mean, I probably still...
That's this weekend, isn't it?
Yes, Sunday. Again, like I said, I don't even really know. I mean, Will Smith is up for King Richard, and I'm trying to think, is any black women? Like I said, I haven't really cared about the Oscars in a while, and I don't think anything that... The only thing I think that I've seen this year that's up for, that's been nominated, was Encanto and King Richard. That's about it. I don't think I've seen anything else. Oh, I saw Licorice Pizza. And to be honest, because I was really excited about that movie, because it was set in the San Fernando...
Not so much.
Because I didn't grow up in the San Fernando Valley in the 70s, but I grew up in L.A. In the 70s. But it was, you know, I was more so for Jan, because she actually grew up in the San Fernando Valley in the 70s.
Hey, Tracy.
If
memory serves me correct, I think Zendaya is up for a nomination for Spider-Man No Way Home.
Okay. Okay, yeah, but I enjoyed Licorice Pizza to a certain extent because there was a lot of stuff. I mean, there was a lot of Easter eggs in it. There was this one scene, because anybody that lived in L.A. in the 70s remembered how horrible the air quality was and how you can look out of a window and the sky was, you could not really see anything out because it was such a haze. And so there's this one thing, they're looking out the window, you see the window, and there's just like this haze. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And so.
Yeah, back when the L.A. sky looked like the Beijing sky does now.
Yeah, pretty much. And so, I mean, and to, you know, there's the stuff that if you lived in L.A. back then, you got it. But other than that, I was really not that impressed. It was right up there. It was like when I, you know, everybody was raving about La La Land. And I'm like.
Oh, why'd you bring that up?
I'm sorry. It's one of the, I mean, it's these things that people rave about, and then you go and see it, and what's the good thing about La La Land is that I didn't pay to see it, because I actually saw it when I went on the cruise, and it was playing all the time on the cruise. So now I'm mad because I actually paid money. Not only did I pay money to see Licorice Pizza, I am really even more angry at myself because I went to see it at the Grove, which meant I actually paid money to see it at the Grove, which meant that I actually put money in the pocket of Rick Caruso, who was running for mayor here in L.A., who is really a Republican, but he... all of a sudden became a Democrat because he knows damn well that he, as a Republican, he would never be able to win here in L.A. But then again, if memory serves, it doesn't matter how much money people have. I mean, look at Meg Whitman, who spent all that money to run as governor. She lost. Let's see, who else? Carly Farina spent a boatload of money. She lost. Who else? There's a couple of people that spent a ton of money to run in California. Oh, come on, buddy. Really? I just made a left turn onto a street, and I just happened to have the misfortune of turning behind and... LAPD patrol car, and now I'm stuck behind this motherfucking. Come on, buddy, just go so I can get you. Anyway, and I can't I can't go around them because the streets are. I guess they're filming. But anyway,
ooh, maybe they're filming the new season of Bosch.
Ooh. And this would be one of the places that they would film. Actually, this
well, I mean, when you said you were trying to make your way through Hollywood, it was like, ooh, Bosch.
Well, actually, this would be the neighborhood if he was still in
Hollywood Homicide.
You know, yeah. If this would be the neighborhood that the chief of police was living in, Hancock Park, and the judge that was murdered.
Yeah.
This is because I have since left Hollywood. I am now, because I was heading south, I am now in Hancock Park. And true story. So let me give you a bit of L.A. The history of racism in Los Angeles, really comes to racism and real estate. So, oh God, I can't go around this putz. Because he's going, I guess he's cruising. I don't know what the hell he's doing. So a million years ago, Nat King Cole bought a house in Hancock Park. And, of course, he's Nat King Cole and, world-renowned, Singer and all this. This is when he had his TV, you know, probably the, I think it's like he was the first black person to have a variety show on network television. And you know, the white people were up in arms. And so they approach him and say, well, you know, we don't like a certain, you know, certain element in our neighborhood. And Nat King Cole's like, oh, well, you know what? As soon as I see those kind of people, I'll make sure I'll let you know.
I don't want them here neither.
I don't want them here either. So he's, of course, he stayed. And actually, I'm going to be going a little further. And then I'm going to actually be going to the same a little bit of, in a few minutes. I'll be driving through Sugar Hill, which is now West Adams. And the same kind of thing, Hattie McDaniel bought a house. And this was like in the 1930s. What happened to Nat King Cole was in the 50s. Same kind of thing. The white people got all upset because she bought a house in Sugar Hill, on Sugar Hill, and the white people sued to try to get her out the neighborhood, and they, you know, went to the Supreme, you know, Superior Court of California, and the judge ruled in her favor to say that they couldn't force her out of the neighborhood. So, so that paved the way for her, you know, she stayed in the neighborhood. And what was the brother who, Mr. Bennett, what was his name? Eddie Rochester.
Rochester, yeah.
Rochester. So he lived in that neighborhood, and I believe Lena Horne did as well.
You did that Mr. Benny all too well.
I know. So that was Tracy's Black History Moment in Los Angeles racism in Los Angeles real estate. Listen. Ta-da!
Oh, yeah.
You know, as quiet as it's kept, L.A. has some of the most restrictive and racist covenants in the country. I mean, you can pull up the deeds and it's still in the deeds.
Oh, the restrictive covenants, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No Jews. No blacks.
No blacks. No.
Well, Ron in Raleigh wants to know, what do you think about Bill Maher saying California will become Republican because you can't do any fucking thing in California because of overregulation?
It's not going to happen.
God, libertarians just make me want to eat dirt and run rabbits and drink pee and put onions in my socks sometimes.
Well, like you said, didn't we have this conversation? Libertarians ain't nobody but Republicans who just smoke weed. That's it. They're just Republicans. You know, that's all they are. And wasn't Bill Maher a decent human being at one point?
I think that was an act.
Okay, like Dennis Miller?
It's well played. Wait a minute. I don't know who's echoing back at me, but somebody is. I had a note from Arthur who said, subject line, butt plug Ted Cruz. Oh, my God. I'm glad you declared you would not mention Lamar's new moniker for Ted Cruz, butt plug Ted Cruz. That kind of language, butt plug Ted Cruz, is offensive and does not deserve to be aired. When I heard butt plug Ted Cruz, I was distraught and saddened by such cheap and tawdry language. Incidentally, Rick Frothy Mick Santorum remains just fine.
Wait a minute, where has he been?
Well, you know, he got bounced from his sweetheart gig at CNN when he got caught sort of openly violating the sort of de minimis standards of not being a total asswipe that CNN has for its you know, for its little multimillionaires. Matt in San Francisco said, subject line, race. Hell, I remember my Crayola 64 crayon box had a color named Flesh. I think eventually changed it to Peach.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about indoctrination.
That part. Oh, so, okay, gentlemen, this is this is the girly section of the program. So earlier today, because I am on, when you become a woman of a certain size, it is very difficult to find a bra because people and manufacturers tend to believe that when you are a woman of a certain size, that you have, because you're a big girl, you have large boobs, which is not the case. So I might as well be trying to find a bra. I might as well be, what is it, the snipe hunt? They don't exist.
Yeah, right. So are you saying big band, small cup?
Yes, big band, small cup.
I have a solution.
What?
Leading lady.
Leading lady, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, Torrid, they do have big band, small cups, but the problem is, I wasn't feeling well today, but I think I found a bra, but it's just, so anyway, I went to, I tried to, they measured me. I'm a 42 BC. So I tried on the bra and it kind of fit and I'm like, oh. So because I'm looking for, I bought this, the cutest, now you know I don't do dresses, but I found this dress last year, mind you. That's like kind of a African dashiki-ish print, and you know it must be cute for me to even care.
Your mother will jerk you bald headed if you go to graduation in slacks. You know this.
No. We have come to a consensus. She is fine with me. I showed you that blouse, right?
Right. That's gorgeous.
And she's like, she's happy with the blouse, and I found the perfect pair of pants. And I am now waiting for, so there's three different pair. I ordered three different pairs of black kitty loafers. I'm waiting for them in the mail to come to see. I'm leaning toward a pair of black patent leather penny loafers.
Oh, those will be cute as hell.
Okay, so no, we have come to the consensus. She is fine with me wearing pants because I have told her that the dress is just not going to do. But I really want to wear this. I really like this dress, and I'm considering wearing it to the black rat because it would be appropriate for the occasion. But I have to find a razorback bra in order to wear that dress because of the cut of the dress.
Of course.
You know, but anyhow, so I'm in the dressing room. They measured me, and it's just, well, you know now what it's like to try on bras. It is just the most frustrating, the most agonizing thing in the world, and, you know, the gaining of the weight and stuff. So what I did, I'm just like, well, I might. So the girl did suggest that I try a strapless bra, but by that time I had given up.
Oh, no.
So.
No. No. No.
Because
the strapless have those silicone bands.
Right. I know.
And they're kind of grippers. I suppose there are people out there who do not know how one goes about putting on a bra. You hook it in front, and you turn the little bastard around.
And you turn it around, and it's...
Well, if you try to do that with a strapless bra that's got silicone gripper bands, when you go to turn it, your skin is going to come with the bra.
Yes.
And it sucks.
It sucks. It sucks. It sucks.
But and, you know, this is one of those things, once again... Bras, in their origin, granted, what would later on become Maiden Form, was started by a woman in New York. And it's kind of like, you know the story of Haagen-Dazs? How?
No, I don't.
Okay, so who doesn't love Haagen-Dazs? I love Haagen-Dazs.
I love me some, especially Dulce de Leche. That's my jam.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay. I mean, even their vanilla. I mean, it's no Bluebell homemade vanilla, but it's good. So the people who came up with Haagen-Dazs wanted it to sound like it was highfalutin.
And so they thought, what sounds more highfalutin? Well, something that sounds like it came from the Nordic countries.
Right, right, right.
Haagen-Dazs is an entirely made-up word.
Okay, yeah.
Don't mean shit. You know, you go to anywhere in Scandinavia and say, what does Haagen-Dazs mean? Absolutely nothing. You know, we put people in mental institutions who wander around saying things like Haagen-Dazs. Same thing with the word brassiere. Don't mean shit. But
it does mean something. It means, you know, it means torture device.
Well, that, but I mean, okay, so the French word for arm is bras, B-R-A-S. So, you know, if you tell a Frenchman you're putting on your bra, you're putting on your arm. Because, you know, they're interchangeable here. But the whole idea of cup sizing, that's what happened when corporate America, which means men, got hold of the design of bras. And in fact, one of the, oh God, the trivia, where does this come from? There's a great scene with Barbara Bel Geddes and Jimmy Stewart in, what is it, Vertigo, maybe? Who is echoing? Who's echoing? I hear me.
Not me.
But anyway, Barbara Bel Geddes is actually, there's a scene where she is designing a bra, and she explains to Jimmy Stewart that it's based on the principle of the cantilevered bridge. But no, it was men designing these things, and so basically it's this weird little ratio between band size and cup size. Anybody who's ever been measured knows. I'm telling all our secrets to the guys now, okay? And so an inch between the furthest projection of the bust and the band size is an A cup. 2 inches is B, 3 inches C, 4 inches D, 5 inches double D, etc. But it don't necessarily work out that way.
No, it does not.
Because the bigger the band size goes, the cup size, okay, so the cup size on a 42A is the same cup that they use in a 40B, the same cup they use in a 38C, and the same cup they use in a 36D. And it bears no relationship whatsoever to human physiology. And it'll drive you nuts. And just to finish off the idea, they hung the word brassiere on these garments because, like Haagen-Dazs, it sounded classy. We know this because the French word for a bra, and this is equally stupid, is soutien-gorge. S-O-U-T-I-E-N-G-O-R-G-E. Which translates from French as throat protector. But then again, I guess if you come from a country that has like Marie Antoinette in it and the terror, maybe women would like to have a throat protector. But I don't think it stands up well against a guillotine. Oh my God, where did you just take me? Tracy! Did everybody just get... Right.
No, I think everyone was muting because they were trying to figure out where the echo was coming from.
Okay, well, it did seem to...
go away?
Yeah, it resolved. By the way, I had a note from Jude in up in Washington State. Tracy's affirmation 2 days ago when she voiced that the exquisite Judge Brown Jackson would be affirmed was powerful. Thank you, Jude. Thank you. Shorty in L.A. is pissed off at Joe Biden. I'm still a bit cranky at Biden's effing arrogance. Biden had the audacity to say that food shortages are going to be real and a necessary price of anti-Russia sanctions. Robin, girl, if I was able to, I would have jumped into the room when President Biden said it's going to be real. Topic, food shortages. The price of sanctions is not just imposed upon Russia. It's imposed upon an awful lot of countries as well, including European countries and our country as well. The moment Joe said an awful lot of, my hat comes off and my forehead reads, then stop it. And I think that effort is underway. But since we're talking now about Russia sanctions, I gotta share something that Darlene just sent along. Because this is one of those eat dirt, run rabbits, drink pee, and put onions in your socks kind of things. Vlad Putin had a televised video conference with what are referred to in the CNN story as cultural figures today. And he said that the West, whatever that means, by the way, Natalie Wynn, ContraPoints, has a brilliant video. She's so fucking smart. On the West, because the West is sort of a fetish object for the right wing. But Putin was talking and saying that Mother Russia is being canceled. J.K. Rowling has recently been canceled because she did not please the fans of the so-called gender freedoms. Today they are trying to cancel a whole 1,000-year-old country, our people. I am talking about the increasing discrimination of everything related to Mother Russia, about this trend which is unfolding in a number of Western states. Tchaikovsky, Shostakovich, and Rachmaninoff are excluded from posters. Russian writers and their books are banned. The last time such a massive campaign to destroy unfavorable literature was carried out by the Nazis in Germany almost 90 years ago. All of which is bullshit. Nobody's banning Shostakovich. Nobody's banning Tchaikovsky. Nobody's banning... you get the idea. Yeah, Tolstoy is as beloved by someone as it yeah, but by name checking Joanne Rowling, that triggered Joanne, and Joanne is so easily triggered. And so she immediately ran to Twitter and said, "Critiques of Western cancel culture are possibly not best made by those currently slaughtering civilians for the crime of resistance or who jail and poison their critics. Hashtag I stand with Ukraine." The funny thing about that is that she didn't say anything about Putin's actual remarks on her being canceled because she did not support Western gender freedoms. So, you know, the old legal principle that silence is acceptance comes into play. And I don't know, maybe she agrees. Because one of the telling things is that Vlad Putin, grunting and squeaking about gender freedoms in Ukraine, which is why Nazis, completely oblivious to the fact that the actual real, no kidding, Nazis suppressed the hell out of gender nonconforming Germans in the years and leading up to and during the Second World War. You know, Jews had to wear the Star of David. Gay men and trans people had to wear a pink triangle. All of which wound up meaning, hey, you get to get on a cattle car and go get murdered. But Joanna Rowling said, "Why, my children's charity, Lumos, has been working with the Ukrainian government since 2013. A reminder, I will personally match all donations to our emergency appeal up to £1 million. Why put a limit on it, Joanne? You've got enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of sopping wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills. £1 million to you ain't piss." But she said, "If you're able to, you can donate here. Again, thank you so very much to all who've already donated." Yeah, but that children's charity, that won't support no trans kids. No, hell no, because Joanne hates her some trans. Let's be clear. Thank you, Darlene. That was a hell of a story.
Hello?
Yeah, is that you, Scott?
Yes, that are me, Robin.
How are you today? How are you, Horn family?
I'm doing well.
Is everything tickety-boo? Are you looking it up?
No, actually, Ferg is in here, and we're having a bit of a colloquy.
Okay,
that's my bad. I am so sorry.
That's all right. You're tickety-boo.
You're tickety-boo.
Tickety-boo.
Oh, well,
anyway.
Doki-oki then.
Don't get any on me. Okay.
Just let them know. I'm hard at work and only home for a day.
Yes.
All right. I like hard at work.
To the wonderful life of...
Well, you're talking into an open microphone, son, so I don't have to tell anybody anything.
I'm not a very smart man.
Yes, you are.
I love you, Dad.
I love you, son.
And I love you, listeners.
Horn Family Community members.
I love you all, whoever may be, whoever will be, and whoever was. I love you.
Oh, damn.
Where do you think he got that voice?
Comprehensive.
That's a hell of a set of pipes, isn't it?
It is.
You'll sound like a man.
Yes, you do, son. You sound like a man.
I love you, Dad.
Love you, son. Some dads are girls, you know. So one of the most beautiful things is he's not had any problem with that whatsoever.
The only reason I chimed in real quick, Robin, is we had 4 years of Trump. We've had 2 years of COVID. We've got Ukraine going on for the last month. So here's my good news, bad news.
Oh, dear.
The bad news is the Martians will attack soon. The good news, they pee gasoline. So,
okay,
there you go.
That's a good one.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I do. I like that. You always bring your A game, Scott.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah, Ben.
When did Biden say we were going to have food shortages because of Ukraine?
Where'd it go?
I hope he had the decency to mention the irresponsible truckers when he's talking about food shortages.
Let's see, ABC Politics, ABC News Politics, 1:50 p.m. yesterday. And he said the U.S. is working with European partners to end trade limitations on sending food abroad to help alleviate supply issues caused by Russian sanctions. Food shortages are going to be real, he said. And so they are working on it.
And Scott, just to let you know, when the Martians come, Mick Jagger will be singing Jumpin' Jack Flash, because it's a gas, gas, gas.
Oh, Gunnar, come on, right. Christopher.
But a lot of those things might be European in nature, because you've got to remember that the Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe.
Absolutely.
And there's already been some talk from the Ukrainians saying they hope this war doesn't go on too long, because then it's going to get into planting season, and that's going to make trouble for everybody. And so I suspect that Biden was not talking about food shortages in the United States.
I suspect I suspect you are correct.
As he was in Europe, and looking at getting the ability for the United States to export food to Europe, which will increase prices in the United States and cause some shortages in the United States, because these corporate giants are going to make the most money they can off the food. And if they can make more money sending it over to Europe, they're going to do that. Howdy, Sparky.
Well, who's the secretary or minister of Victory Gardens? Doesn't anybody – you know, this is how crazy this country is. We once had a generation of people who, when trouble came, they did something to mitigate the effect of the trouble. Back during World War II, and maybe even beyond that, Victory Gardens. And I know not everybody has...
Actually, Victory Gardens extend before World War II, Scott. It actually got started in World War I.
Well, that makes sense. I like that sound, whoever made it.
Yeah, that for once, that wasn't on me.
That's that Bert Kempford guitar pluck, that bass guitar. I have to explain who Bert Kempford was. Oh, God damn, I get myself into these.
Well, things. You know, the John Bartholomew Tucker, I mean, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, you're asking, where did you get the trivia? Raising my hand, Robin, raising my hand.
Do tell, Scott.
Is Tracy still on? I don't hear her.
I am.
Hi, Tracy. I was
late. Hey, how are you?
I was late getting in, and I picked up the program when you were talking about the housing discrimination in L.A. Didn't they also poison Nat King Cole's dog, Buster?
I wouldn't be surprised. Because evil motherfuckers.
It was right after he moved in to that house, that nice house in that white neighborhood. And they gave him an hellacious time.
Oh, it was horrible.
And I think I'm pretty sure, if I'm remembering, I read his wife's book that was written about 10 years after he died. I like that noise, too.
Oh, my God, what's going on?
He had a boxer dog named Buster, I think. And they poisoned that poor dog.
It's Robin.
I would not be surprised because, you know, evil.
My goodness. Is there a fight going
on? It's Robin.
On?
It's Robin making the noise.
No, the other noise, the banging around noise was not me. That last was me.
That I was tuned into the Gillette Cavalcade of sports Friday night fights by accident. God damn.
It almost sounds like somebody's in the ice chest, you know, when you're digging through ice in an ice chest.
That's outside, Christopher.
That's not me.
Gotta be body disposal tips before.
Oh, that could be. Keeping parts on ice. Yeah, maybe.
But anyway, I mean, there are always workarounds, no matter what. And these wimps, and I think that's the proper word for them. Wasn't George Bush Sr., wasn't he?
The wimp factor.
The wimp factor. These little wussies, wimpies and wussies, when anything inconvenient, even when there's the perception of them being somehow inconvenienced, they do two things instinctively. They're like fucking amoebas on a petri dish. You hit them with a hot needle, and they go into their act, like Michigan J. Frog with the straw hat and the hello, my darling. Anyway, they go right into their deal. Whenever they get in any way inconvenienced, and they blame the Democrats, and it's Biden's fault, and it's socialism, it's radical leftism.
Everybody remember Dr. Seuss?
I am so sick of these fuckers. Just so, if I had a victory garden, I'd pick up my hoe, and I'd start wailing on them.
Tracy, how is it in lovely L.A.?
Well, actually, it's quite lovely. I don't know what the temperature is right now, but it is gorgeous outside. I am currently, you know, now I'm in, I don't know what they call this down, but I'm in South LA, heading south on 4th Avenue, trying to get to, my next to last drop off before I head home. And I'm tired. I'm just thinking about how much more work I have to do before the end of the semester and, planning, you know, my graduation party tomorrow. I'm meeting with the caterer to do a tasting menu of everything we're serving at the graduation party, and so it's going to be chicken and waffles, shrimp and grits, collard green dip with a hot water cornbread.
Anybody
chips.
Want to hear about my date?
Well, after we hear Tracy,
yeah, after food porn,
after food porn.
And that's about it. Well, and then, you know, that's about it. And I have to work after that. But yes, let's hear about Sparky's date, because I was going to ask you about that, Sparky, because I heard that you were dating, and so I am very happy for you, my dear. That's my God. You know, that's awesome. So please do tell us about your date, because obviously it involves food porn.
Well, the food porn was last Saturday, because you guys didn't hear about that date.
She called me up. Is this the same person? Are you only dating one person, or are you dating multiple people?
Only dating one person. Her name is Mary.
Nice.
And we went to high school together, but we didn't know each other.
Oh, okay.
That's something you didn't know.
Okay.
But she's widowed like me.
Okay.
So we're in that till death do you part club.
Was it recent?
The parting has taken place. Yes.
Was it recent, like yours, Sparky?
No. Hers was 2015.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So last Friday night, she invited me to go to the nursery with her on Saturday morning. That was the only plan we had. So we met at, there's a park and ride on Interstate 5 right here where the road that goes to her house is. I met her there. And we went to the nursery together, and we had fun trekking around the nursery. I don't know what she was looking for, but all I know is she was happy and smiling, and it was raining, kind of drizzling rain. And we just kept looking at each other, and she goes, "That's it, yeah, you know." And so before we got to the nursery, I suggested, "You want to go out to lunch?" She says, "Where are we going to go?" And I said, "To the Mongolian barbecue in Reading." I don't know if any of you have had Mongolian barbecue, but it's one of my favorite things.
No, I have. It's good.
I love Mongolian barbecue. Did you do, you know, the way you pick all your fixing and they throw it on that big old grill and they fry it. Well, yeah.
We went in there and they only had like one waitress, and then there was a guy making, it's also a sushi place. So they had a guy making sushi, and then they had the guy that worked the grill for cooking up the Mongolian barbecue. So we sat at the table, and there's little instructions on a placemat of what you're supposed to do, and they're supposed to bring you rice and soup, and they bring you the little chip thing, what do you call it? I don't know, but it's a Chinese chip or something. And then we sat there, and we waited, and she came over, and she gave us these big old oversized, you know, lightweight plastic slip-on gloves things you wear. And so we knew that everybody was putting those on. And then we put those on, and then we go through the line and pick out everything we want and then get that cooked. But I felt sorry for that waitress in there, because she was the only one in there. It was during the lunch hour, and there was people coming and going in there. And she was running to keep up with everybody. And then we went back to her house. I shared some pictures with her house that I took with some people. But she lives on a man-made lake. It's called Lake California, Tracy.
Okay.
And she has this big house with vaulted ceilings in it.
Oh, damn.
And she has an indoor lap pool.
No!
Yes, for swimming. And it's about 30 feet long or so, maybe longer. Runs the whole length of the width of the house. And it's right off her bedroom. She has a door that you can go in there. It's totally enclosed and everything. And she swims laps in there every morning.
So she in shape.
She's in shape. But see, the deck is just beautiful. It's not a very big, I mean, wide, but it wraps, it goes the whole length of the back of the house, and you look off the deck and you look straight down into the lake. the lake underneath the deck is where the lake just starts and then slopes down in. And she has it on the other house, side.
Is it north and south facing or east and west facing? So you get the sunrise, sunset, or?
It's east and west facing, kind of.
So you get the sunrise and the sunset.
Yeah.
Nice.
On events, they shoot fireworks off over the lake and stuff. It's wow. Like it's a gated community. And then on the other side of the house, there's a little inlet that comes in. She has a little dock for just a little boat, some kayaks and stuff. So when she's going on a trip to Santa Rosa, she came down today to spend the afternoon with me, but she just left a little while ago. She had to go home and feed her dog, she said.
How far does she live from you, Sparky?
22.6 miles.
So it takes about a half an hour?
Yeah, about okay. That is most it's up the freeway to Cottonwood, and then just off the freeway, and then it's like 5 miles into her house off I-5. Okay.
Not bad.
So she spent the afternoon with me. We went out to the man cave. I showed her a bunch of pictures, the work I used to do and everything, and showed her what I cleaned off the shelf out there, and I've got my old electric train, one from when I was a little kid, displayed up on the shelf. And I had to show her that because that was a project I've been working on.
Well, I mean, come on. What woman doesn't like to see, you know, the something that you dealt with when you were, I mean, you know, it's like the stuff that Jan, when we moved back into the house and the stuff that she showed me when she was a kid. And I think that stuff is precious because I really don't, you know, it's so, cause I don't really have a lot of stuff. I don't have any stuff from my childhood at all, really, because of how much we moved around. So, I think it's wonderful when people still have stuff from their childhood. I think it's precious. Well,
I live in the house that I grew up in.
I know that's what I'm saying. So I appreciate it when people still have stuff from their childhood because I do not. So like I said, I moved around a lot. So I appreciate people who I think it's fortunate that people have their child, you know, stuff from their childhood because like I said, I don't. I don't even really have any pictures from my childhood at all.
Anyway, Wednesday was her birthday.
Oh. So,
two nights before that, my neighbor's been cleaning up my house. My neighbor Kathy and her sister come over and they were clean. They cleaned everything, wiped down. They took every knickknack down, dusted it, because my wife has had a lot of stuff here. I mean, they cleaned out her room because I couldn't do it. I mean, it's too hard for me to do it. I can understand that. But anyway, they cleaned out the room and they get packed up.
Sometimes you just need somebody else to do it because, like you said, it's just too hard.
Well, anyway, the other night, Kathy was cleaning my shower. And I was in my computer room on the computer and we're talking back and forth. And I told her, you know, Wednesday's Mary's birthday. First, she didn't miss a beat. She goes, you need to buy her some flowers.
Wow. So I
spin around, get on the computer, bring up the first online flower thing I can find. I'll order some flowers. Okay, so she was not home when they delivered them on Wednesday. And she's got a garage. She just pulls up in the garage and shuts the garage, goes in the house that way. But her front door is a glass kind of door. We got a lot of glass in it. And she looked, she glanced over and she saw these flowers sitting outside the door. So she picks them up, brings them on, sits them on her counter. And then there was a card in there. She opens the card and it's really religious kind of shit in there about God and all this stuff.
What? Oh, God.
And she goes, who the hell? And there's no signature in it because the florist sent all this stuff. So finally she finds a little note they'd written up that what I'd put up, written up, and then she knew it was from me.
Why'd they include all the religious crazy stuff?
That was the card. I don't know what florist it is. Never, probably never know.
I wouldn't go back to
but
that
I'll never
one.
Do business with them.
No.
If I knew who they were.
Oh, my God.
Sounds like it might have been the Hobby Lobby brothers.
Oh, I just geez. Love it when love blossoms.
Hey, Mr. Britovo, how are you, sir?
John Britovo, bless your heart.
Man, look who just slid into our DMs.
Look what the dog dragged into the damn room.
Well, I conjured you earlier because I was I mentioned that Supreme Court case earlier where they said that the condemned killer who committed his crime in 2004 in Corpus Christi would get to have a priest touch his foot and pray while he was being horizontally crucified by the state of Texas.
Well, of course, we want to, you know, give him a good ride into heaven. You know that's where he's going. Yeah. Are you shitting me? Yes. I remember that case. I remember the murder of that case down here.
Well, that's what I wondered. I wondered if you would remember that. Yeah. Asshole stabbed a guy 29 times and stole $125 from him.
Yeah. Ain't life worth a lot? $125. You stabbed that many. You know, personally, I'm sorry. You know, fry his ass. You know, I'm done.
Yeah,
what year was that, John?
I don't have any mercy for.
2004.
Oh, okay. I was going by then.
Yeah. Well, I got it. I have what I hope will be a little bit of good news, John.
What? Give me some good news. I need some damn good news.
I got out my Magic 8 Ball with the cracked screen that says "Answer Hazy, ask again later," and I got out my Ouija board and my copy of Clue.
Oh, Clue. That's a good one.
And I think hopefully, sometime between now and Tuesday.
Tuesday.
My Act Blue account will be live.
Outstanding, Robin. We need to get that going, baby. That is a way for a lot of people so easily to donate.
Congratulations, Robin.
And I hope you pumped a little bit of that during the show here.
Well,
the need for that, because running a campaign, people, is not cheap.
Well, I mean, we have what is now a $970 fundraising hole. So I've been kind of just trying to focus on keeping this thing on the air. But, yeah.
That's a big hole. That's a big hole, Robin. We need to get that filled up.
Yeah.
We need to get that filled up.
And all of 10 minutes.
Out there, y'all don't know the shit. I do. This is the way Robin makes a living, right here, running her mouth. That's it. The only way to make a living, ain't it?
This is how the internet stays on. This is how the lights stays on. Yeah. And I don't think I could do this if I was working the night shift stocking shelves at Walmart.
No, you wouldn't have time to do it to begin with. And it would take everything you make at Walmart just to turn on everything you need to do this, to keep yourself on the air, on the internet.
Right.
You know, it takes money. And besides that, now you're running for office. So the need is tremendous. So in your heart of giving, while you're out there giving, and there's a lot of reasons to give to nowadays, Lord knows. But if you have a little extra, then yeah, throw it Robin's way, whether it be in the form of a campaign donation or it's just a donation to the Horn family, from the Horn family, to keep her on the air. Because it only happens when there's participation amongst the family. And I know it's hard enough for Robin to come out and ask for it anyway. That's a tough thing for somebody to have to do. You know, you're doing your job, and most people, you don't have to go to your boss and say, hey, can I get paid a little bit? You know, you don't do that. You get paid. And in Robin's case, this is her job. This is the way she makes a living. So if it's within your heart and within your budget, please think about it. That's all. I always want to preach it because I know the difficulties it is in doing this shit.
Hey, John.
Not to mention the personal shit that you have to go through.
I need to add a P.S. to what John's saying because I know he's too nice to bring it up. But I've been around long enough to know that fundraising is important on its own accord. But if it gets to a certain point, Robin breaks out the Pat Boone in leather music.
Oh,
there you go. The punk Pat Boone. We do not need this, people.
Do you really want that?
There could be. There could be singing.
Singing could be involved. My therapy bill.
If I was y'all, I'd be reaching for my wallet right about now. Oh Lordy!
Wasn't that called heavy metal Boone?
Something like that.
Yeah, metal Boone. I've tried to forget it, but like Lee Greenwood, it will not leave my DJ brain.
The only milk-drinking, white-shoe-wearing punker on earth. Ah, that gives me the willies.
Scott, how are you, by the way?
Always I'm wonderful, baby. I can't tell you how happy I am. I wake up every morning. And it's like Snow White or whichever Disney.
Oh, kiss my ass. I didn't want to hear all that shit. Now you're making my life really sound sick.
Fucking bluebirds hanging up my laundry. Singing.
Really?
No, hanging up my laundry out back in the line. I mean, air-blown laundry. You can't get better than that with bluebirds doing it, John.
That's it. I'm moving to California. I want to smoke what he's smoking. That's all. That's all there is to that shit.
Bluebird.
Did I hear Tracy in here?
Yeah, Tracy's in here.
Oh, man. She's two-timing you last night. I had her on the show last night. I just love that girl. I love her. I Tracy. Call Bernadette my Tracy. And she did. She visited us last night. So Tracy, thank you very much. That was very nice. Thank you. Did I run her off? Am I cut off now?
No, you're right there. Okay. You're right there.
Okay.
Well, you know, Bernadette continues to be a blessing, because she is. I mean, Priest Trees has changed our lives. It really, really has. Because pain relief.
I'm addicted to the shit myself.
Pain relief is.
Tracy left.
Pain relief is no easy thing. And the other night, Annette just handed me the little tin and said, "Please," and I said, "Sure." And the relief is almost immediate. And then she turned around and put some on my neck. And, I mean, it's stunning. You get a decent night's sleep, for God's sake.
It is. And it sounds like me and you are pushing a product just for pushing a product. But, no, that's not it at all. Before there was a product, it was just a gift from a friend that really, really worked.
Yeah.
And it's just been word of mouth, because Priest Trees is something that was developed in her own home, given the love that it takes to produce something like that, because she cares. Not because she's trying to make a profit or make a business, but she cares. Right. And she's not only about that with her salve. Woman's putting up, making tomato paste and putting it up and stuff.
Who? Oh my! Wait! Hold on!
Oh no, she's always doing that shit.
Homemade tomato paste?
Yes. You've ever known anybody make homemade?
Damn it!
Tomato paste? No.
Oh.
No, I've never known anybody do that. I've seen them put up tomatoes, sure, but to make a paste?
Oh.
Man, I'm telling you, yes, Bernadette is a woman of many, many, many talents. Very smart.
Actually, making tomato paste isn't all that hard if you use your microwave oven.
Oh, really? Really? You just pop it in there and just hit it until it just solidifies, or what?
No. What you do is you grind up your tomatoes, and then you can either put it in a pot and push a colander down into the paste kind of thing, and the liquid will come in, or you can put it in a muslin bag and let it hang. And let all the juice run out to where you have all the solids. And then the old-fashioned way is put it in a pot and stir the shit out of it while it cooks down. But the easier way is to put it in a microwave and let the water that's left boil off in the microwave, because you won't burn it. If you do it in a regular pot on the stove, you got a hard time not burning it. But in a microwave, it's actually pretty easy.
See, right there, I'm thinking the easiest way is just to try to bake some out of Bernadette.
Well, path of least resistance, John. Path of least
that's
resistance.
That's true. That's true. It would be easier for her to just mail me some. No, she does. She puts up. She believes she's a firm believer in growing food. As a matter of fact, a lot of times on the show, she will tell people in the blue room after the show. is she'll tell people, grow some food, get you some buckets. You're going to need it. You might as well start learning how to do it now. But, yeah, there's a whole lot of what Bernadette eats on her plate that she makes right there at the house. Yeah, she's a woman of many, many talents.
Lord, fresh tomato. I mean, this, you know, it's, we don't plant our gardens till Mother's Day.
I hope she's listening. I hope she's blushing like shit, too.
We don't plant, I do, too. We don't plant our tomatoes till, like, Mother's Day. And then that means you start getting them mid to late July. And that's when you can start getting excited about things like bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwiches.
There you go.
And fried green tomatoes and you know, things like that.
I'm going to, I planted my tomatoes. I planted them probably about 5 or 6 days ago.
Don't make me hate you.
I'm going to plant them again this weekend. Because the cats thought it was a freaking litter box.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Went out there to water them. And I got like 4 big 5-gallon buckets out there. And each one of them, because there's a lot of cats around here, it just pissed me off.
Fluffy, get out of the
Now I got to redo it again. And I'm going to get some wire cage and put around it. And
isn't it? Isn't it true, John, and I haven't grown anything since I lived in Jefferson City, Missouri, back in the 90s, but isn't it true?
Hey, Scott, my dad was born in Jefferson City, Missouri.
Oh, really?
It's a small world, baby.
Yes, Jefferson City. Yeah.
Isn't it true that not only is it not factory touched, not touched by factory hands, the food that we grow, but doesn't it, there's a certain better taste and loveliness to it attached to the part about you actually putting in the work and watching the process and harvesting and cooking and sitting down and eating.
It's going to be more satisfying. It's going to taste great.
Yes.
One thing, because you control what how it's grown. And believe me, if you're growing, you're going to take the care to do it right.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, it's going to be much better tasting. It's going to make you feel a little bit better about, you know, the food you're eating. Yeah, you grew that. That tomato, that's your tomato. Nobody's touched that tomato but you. And peppers,
and
nobody
you know,
touched it.
Two things I love, tomatoes and bell peppers. One, there is nothing better on God's earth than a ripe tomato plucked off the vine, quickly rinsed to get any dirt off of it, and just stand there in the garden and eat it like an apple. It's heavenly.
You know, Robin, that's you know, I hated tomatoes when I was growing up. Didn't hate them, but didn't, unless I was in spaghetti
you
know, sauce.
I think that's a kid thing, John.
Well, you know where I turned and learned is actually, it's not a very good story, but it was when I was in reform school. 1968, the place I was at in Monroe, Louisiana, we grew all our own food, everything. Raised cattle, raised hogs, raised chickens. I've been knee-deep in chicken shit. A lot of stories came out of this place, but one of them was my learning to, because when you went out to go hoe the fields and they put you off in a field of tomatoes, and we're talking just long ass rows of tomatoes. Not this is, you know, because we not only grew for our own, we sold to the local community to support the institution and all that kind of stuff. And that's where I learned to eat tomatoes, to learn to have an appreciation for them, because all I had to do is sneak some salt out there, and I was good to go for the day.
Yeah. It's pure joy. And one of the places where my mind turned was I guess maybe I was 12 or 13. And my dad told my mother that he had a hankering, and I don't know if you've ever even had these, tomato preserves.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have, in Louisiana. Oh, Lord, that was a long time ago.
And my mother made tomato preserves. She kept a little garden in our backyard, and she made tomato preserves for my dad, and I tried them. And the other thing she made was cream-stewed tomatoes over hot homemade biscuits.
Nope, never had that.
Oh, John.
Get a recipe, John, and mix you up some of that.
Oh, I feel fairly confident you've got a biscuit recipe, John Bredevoort.
I just had biscuits this morning. Thank you very much.
Yep, exactly.
Yes.
Cream stewed tomatoes. You know, they thick. Really? You take fresh tomatoes and you chop them. Maybe chop a real, get a good sweet onion, and maybe chop a little bit of a green chili into it. And with all those juices and everything, let it simmer. Add a little bit of sugar. And then when it's almost at a boiling point, you add in your ice cold milk and cornstarch slurry.
And it
thickens it, and you serve that over hot biscuits, and people will come a running.
No shit, that sounds. Oh,
it's you'll weep. I'm telling you.
Put that recipe up somewhere. To where we can get it.
I'll text it to you or message it to you.
All right. Yeah,
but the other thing, and this is just a goofy little simple thing, take a nice bell pepper, have it, scoop out all the seeds and everything,
all right,
and fill that sucker with cottage cheese, and then sprinkle some Tony Sachery's over it.
No Tony Sachery.
And it's simple, it's easy. It's the wonderfulness of the cottage cheese, the Tony Sachery's, you know, flavor, and then that gorgeous crunch of that ice cold bell pepper.
I love a good bell pepper. I love a good bell pepper. And in my omelets in the morning or in my salad at night, it doesn't matter. I like bell pepper. Of course, I like jalapenos too. So.
Oh Lord! Absolutely.
I do. I can't hardly make it a day without a jalapeno or two. Some way, either raw, you know, and then I do my potatoes in the morning.
Well, you know, I don't know if it extends as far west as where you are, but you know, the Gulf Coast has a brilliant Southeast Asian culture, particularly Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
And I love pho, you know, the soup, the noodle soup with the bean sprouts and all of that stuff. And I had some of that on Wednesday because there was a cute little Vietnamese restaurant down in Huntington. And one of the most lovely things about a bowl of pho is that little pile of carefully sliced, fresh, crispy jalapenos that you add into that boiling soup, and it kind of cooks a little and tenderizes in there along with the beef and everything, and makes it spicy and beautiful and fiery. And oh, sorry. I get all worked up. I get it.
Food will do that.
Yeah.
And one section of our Discord channel is food porn. And it is loaded up with pictures. Everybody go make their meals and stuff and then post pictures.
Well, I got to tell you, the pulled pork, those three pork shoulders that I smoked last weekend, it filled up one of the large aluminum foil pan, the big one. You know, it's about 4 inches deep. I pulled those. I filled that pan up, and in two hours there was not a molecule of pulled pork left.
You had friends,
and hopefully they will remember that pulled pork on primary day. Oh shit! It's primary day. I better go vote for Robin.
That's the lady with the pulled pork.
Yes,
that lady. Hey, if she knows pulled pork, you know she knows business and government. Let's vote for her.
Let's do. Well, y'all, in order to be able to continue to post the program to Podbean for the rest of the month, I've got to end my portion of this program. But I tell you what, it's been a fantastic conversation, and John, it is always a joy to have you pop by.
I'm sorry I missed it. I was having a discussion with my son the other day. I might rearrange my schedule or something because. My Beer and Bud Friday show is conflicting with your show, and I don't like that. So I'm going to do some adjusting.
Well, here. I mean, you don't. No. I mean, we're pals. I mean, it's.
Oh, I know it. I know it.
We got cross pollination going on.
We got lots of cross pollination going. I am enjoying the hell out of it. The Horn family is always welcome over at the Blue Dot show and every Blue Dot.
And is always welcome here. And because, you know, we are a larger, you know, we are a community.
We are, and we're marching in the same direction, baby.
Yes, exactly.
We're marching in the same direction. We have the same message, and that is, you know, like I tell people all the time, I'm a cheerleader, baby. That's all I'm doing is trying to lead the cheer. Let's go. Let's get what we need to be doing done. And I don't know, man. I'm ready.
And I'm ready. You know, it's something. If we can't be motivated, I mean, I hate all these stories. You know, people stay home during the off year, midterm elections, and turnout sucks, and that's how we wind up screwed.
Yes.
And if you watch those confirmation hearings,
and I did, and I want to do a whole lot of slapping.
Yeah. Well, you know, just for the hell and all of it, say something to yourself. Senate Judiciary Chairwoman Marsha Blackburn.
Oh, God.
I mean,
that's
right out of Tennessee.
Right. I mean, does that not give you the fantage? Does that not give you the damn vapors?
Pick one. Pick Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, John Cornyn. Pick one.
Senate Judiciary Chair Josh Hawley.
Oh, my God. If this wasn't a dog and pony show put on for the QAnon maggot crowd, I don't know what was.
They're an object lesson on why to participate in the midterms. Because really,
precisely, yourself, Scott.
Do you want these people anywhere near the levers of power just because you didn't take the time to participate in your civic duty?
I don't want to be cliche, but it is your patriotic duty. If you are serious about loving this country and being involved, it is the least that we can do as citizens is to participate.
It's the least and the most.
Yes, at the same time, the least and the most.
Enough Democrats who realized how important 2018 was, and I hope we even have more, many, many, many more in 2022.
Hey, John and Robin, got a quick question for you guys. You guys remember hearing about former Missouri Governor Eric Greitens?
Eric Greitens.
Oh, that dude is off the rails.
Yeah, he's been accused of sexual assault again, this time by his wife, and the Republicans in Missouri are telling him to drop out of the race. He said, no, I'm not going to do it.
Well, of course he's not. It's his wife. God, he can do whatever he wants.
I was still living in Missouri when he was governor, and he got impeached. And then, lo and behold, you know who took his place? And that's when he took his place. That's when we moved to Canada because we were like, no, we're not going to deal with another damn Republican governor in Missouri. And sure enough, I got a Democratic governor in Canada. So I'm like, thank God for that.
You know, it's we have to be involved not only in national politics, but in your local government. It is how you create a better society. It is how we make things better for ourselves and our country. It's to make sure that we participate.
Yep.
Because if you don't, you end up like I got. My congressman, Michael Clout, who is just he's a sad excuse for a human being to begin with. But he's a total waste of time as far as a congressman. He's too busy trying to lick Donnie Trump's ass than to do anything for the state of Texas, much less this country.
Yep, and it's that Trump-loving a-hole that's now the current governor of Missouri, Mike Parsons, who took over when Eric Greitens got impeached.
Well, we have to do something about it, Ben. All of us do.
Oh, yeah.
And that's our responsibility, and it should be our duty.
I'm telling everybody I can to get out and vote blue no matter who this year. Life depends on it.
It does. All right, Robin, I know you got to go, baby.
I do. John, thank you so much. And the minute that I get that Act Blue link,
let me know.
They said it'll take up to 7 days, and I was like, well, I hope that was this just them giving themselves a. But no, it looks like it's going to take the full 7. But the minute I get it, I will text you.
Shoot it to me, and we'll do you 2 for blue again.
I surely do appreciate it. I cannot tell you how much I do, and if
we love you, baby.
If the stars align, you know, maybe I can pop by on Sunday.
We're always there if you find time.
I would love that. And thank you to Earther. Earther just got his first month subscription doubled courtesy of Zed. And so that'll take us down to $850 to go to get caught up. Thank you, Earther.
Thank you so much.
And if anybody wants to jump in over the course of the weekend, golly Moses, we sure could use it, because we got four more days of March, and well, it's like Jerry Reed saying, you know, long way to go, short time to get there.
Hey, Robin, put me down for 15.
Thank you, Christopher. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris. And for all of you who might be listening after hours, yeah, think about that. Make that donation if you can. It's going to a worthy cause to keep Robin's voice on the air. We need progressive voices throughout this country, especially in places that you think are ruby red, and there is no democracy. But Democrats live in Robin's voice.
The fight starts one person at a time, especially somebody with the gumption to go after it.
And you do, baby.
And you know, frankly, not bragging, but I don't have 10 cents worth of back down in me.
Nope. I'm not used to doing that shit. Ain't going to start now.
Not in the least.
The torpedoes, baby. Full speed ahead.
Exactly. John, everybody on the call, thank you so much. It has been a magnificent evening, and it's been a week, and we will get back with more Ann Monday come Tuesday, or no, come Monday, actually. We'll be back with more Ann Monday on Monday, and it'll be, weekends, the more Ann's pile up like cordwood. And it'll just be a matter of trying to wade through them all. So I hope you'll be here Monday. And in the meantime, I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. And thanks so much to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious time engaging in the program in whatsoever manner you may choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky. And, hey, thank you, Roger, for substitute lightsabering. And thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest folks I know, the people at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And now, a union shop. Thank you so very much to each and every one of you who's reached out or will reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to co-sponsor HR 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. Every call gets a little closer to Appalachia's salvation. Please stay safe. Be part of the 29% who have had all three shots in America. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance. And, you know, for God's sakes, if somebody comes burbling towards you saying something like, I don't know, J.K. Rowling was cancel cultured because of gender freedoms, avoid that murderous tyrant like the plague. Because he is. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.